Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, March 16th, 2020. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, it's plural questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of the website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on our top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to gospel reading tonight, scripture reading tonight is going to be in the Gospel of Mark. We're just going into chapter 12. Also, we'll be picking up in the beginning of the chapter. This is the Gospel of Mark. We're going to read chapter 12, verses 1 through 17. And he, Jesus, began to speak unto them in parables. A certain man planted a vineyard, and set a hedge about it, and digged a place for the wine vat, and built a tower, and let it out to husbandmen, and went into a far country. And at the season he sent to the husbandmen a servant, that he might receive from the husbandmen of the fruits of the vineyard. And they caught him, and beat him, and sent him away empty. And again he sent unto them another servant, and at him they cast stones, and wounded him in the head, and sent him away shamefully handled. And again he sent another, and him they killed, and many others, beating some and killing some. Having yet therefore one son, his well-beloved, he sent him also last unto them, saying, They will reverence my son. But those husbandmen said among themselves, This is the heir. Come, let us kill him, and the inheritance shall be ours. And they took him, and killed him, and cast him out of the vineyard. What shall therefore the Lord of the vineyard do? He will come and destroy the husbandmen, and will give the vineyard unto others. And have ye not read the scripture, The stone which the builders rejected is become the head of the corner. This was the Lord's doing, and it is marvelous in his eyes. And they sought to lay hands on him, but feared the people, for they knew that he had spoken the parables against them. And they left him, and went their way. And they sent unto him a certain of the Pharisees and the Herodians to catch him in his words. And when they were come, they said unto him, Master, we know that thou art true, and carest for no man, for thou regardest not the persons of men, but teachest the ways of God in truth. Is it lawful to give tribute to Caesar or not? Shall we give it, or shall we not give? But he, knowing their hypocrisy, said unto them, Why tempt ye me? Bring me a penny, that I may see it. And they brought it. And he said unto them, Whose is this image and subscription? And they said unto him, Caesar's. And Jesus answering said unto them, Render to Caesar the things that are Caesar, and to God the things that are God. And they marveled at him. That was Mark chapter 12, verses 1 through 17. Okay, by the way, how am I coming through? Am I coming through okay?
Sound good to me.
Okay. All right, I got a new mic plugged in. Hopefully it's going to be better than the last one.
Yay, it does. It sounds real good.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to talk a little bit about joiners tonight. But before we get into that detail, we're going to talk about some other things we're doing just real quickly. We got on our website, nationallibertyalliance.org, you go up there and you'll see a tab that says the people's duty. And it's extremely important that people look at all the things underneath that particular tab, because if we want to have government by consent, it's your duty to do these things, to take control, to seize control of our government. Right now, the people do not have control of our government. But the government has control of the government, particularly the deep state, which, of course, is... the swamp is being drained, and hopefully soon it'll be eradicated. But in any event, right now is the time for educating ourselves, preparing ourselves. And underneath that particular tab, people's duty, people can we put up a tab just in case there's anybody that's not isn't registered to vote. We put that tab up there this week. So if you're not registered to vote, you definitely should get go up there, click on that tab, and register to vote. But the things that people need to do in order to take back our nation is, one is to become a committee man. It's probably the most powerful position an individual can take, because that is true consent of government. Right now, the committee man is controlled by private associations. One of them is called the Republican Party, and the other one is called the Democratic Party. But they are private associations. They are not the process that our founding fathers set up. even though there was political parties that were, you know, coming up to become parties in the beginning, Washington spoke against them very strongly. And I know Jefferson wasn't too interested in the parties either, but he did make a position as from the Republican perspective that we are a republic. And of course, you know, you take a position, next thing you know, you coined a particular name. In any event, we became a nation with two parties particularly. There are other parties, and some parties have come and gone. And today we have the two major parties, even though there are other minor parties. They have no power at all. they don't even have a place within the Board of Election. If you go to the Board of Election, you'll find on the one side there will be the Republicans, and on the other side will be the Democrats. And depending on what business it is you're discussing, you go to one line or the other. But there is no place for any other party. But these two parties have totally taken control of our nation. Our nation was built in such a way that there was no necessity for parties, but we do have them. And when you watch what's going on in Congress and you see the gridlock and the problems that they don't go forward with to fix the problems that so desperately need to be repaired, and of course create problems by doing things that they have no power or authority to do, they do these things under the name of the party. And you'll find the Republicans will stick with the Republicans, and the Democrats will stick with the Democrats. Occasionally someone might cross the line, but generally speaking, that's the way it is, and who's ever in power, it will be done. But what about the people's will? Because all of the narrative up there is nothing but, you know, just power and authority. So, in any event, we the people are the only ones that can stop this. The committeemen can stop this. When people are elected to go to Congress, let's say, in the federal level, we elect our federal leaders, and we send them to Congress, or we elect our leaders and send them to our state capitals, we expect them to do the will of their constituents. We expect them to represent us. But they don't. They represent either the individuals who are lining their pockets with money, the special interest groups, or they represent the will of the party. The people never get to play in any way of this whole thing. The parties have seized 100% control. Did I say 100%? They did. Parties have seized 100% control of the committeeman process. Whether there be an elected committeeman anywhere in the nation, I'm not aware of it. I can tell you that there are only a few here in New York, and only because we taught them how to become. And ultimately, we were taught by another individual, Lenny Roberto. And I'm sure he was taught by someone else, maybe. But in any event, you know, he sparked something in me when I heard him speaking about the power and the authority of the committeemen. So we got heavily involved in that. So we had quite a few people running for that position who was properly elected. But they're not empowered, never were empowered, never can be empowered, because no one will acknowledge them. And so, therefore, the private associations who have the will of special interest groups, their own will, party bosses, they run the show, they make all the decisions, they decide who goes onto the ballots, and there's not a damn thing you or me can do about it, except for taking it back. And so, therefore, you know, this is the call to arms, arms to take back your nation through education. Through an understanding how the process works. This is the time, this is an opportunity for us to do something. So I'm really expecting everyone to become a committeeman. I wasn't going to become one because I got too many things to do running with this process here, but I realize I should, and I've been a committeeman on a couple of occasions, but again, with no power, no authority. By the way, we in New York here, we came together in Kingston, New York, which was the original capital of New York, and we had one, the elected committeemen did. Both parties, both Republican and Democrats, who were elected committeemen, had a convention in Kingston, New York, some years back. I think it was 2008, 2009, somewhere around there. And we rewrote the party rules. And we wrote the party rules in the favor of the people. A way to empower the people, to prevent from party bosses from taking over, for anyone to seize control. Made it very difficult for that to happen. And by the way, what happens in the committee man process is the very same thing that happened in the committees out there in Washington, D.C., or in your own capital. When they create these committees, they get lost, and some chairman takes control, and they become the decider. And, of course, they'll always do the will of the party or the will of their pockets. It's always the same. And it'll continue to be the same. It doesn't matter that, President Trump was elected president and that he's cleaning house and is going to take out the deep state and eradicate them and drain the swamp. Doesn't matter. Not at all. If the people do not take these positions and take power and take authority and become the consenters of their government, doesn't matter. They'll continue to do the same. The parties will become stronger. These people will become richer. We will become poorer. And everything that Trump is doing to change things, to change the direction of this nation, to bring us back to who we were as a people, our heritage, to make us great again, all that is going to wash away and disappear as soon as the next king comes into power. And really, they're not a king, of course, but they play the role of the king. Our nation is really an oligarchy. They call us a democracy. A democracy is the first beginnings and for the creation of an oligarchy. It's its only purpose. It always murders itself, never lasts long. And at the end, you have the oligarchy. They stick an individual up there, make them look good, and you think that you've voted them in, and they're going to do the will of the people, and they're going to do the right thing. Forget about it. It's not going to happen. It's endless. It's endless. Ever since I became politically conscious, in the beginning I was very naive, thinking this is great, so on and so forth. I start to watch what's going on. You put your vote in, and it's the same old thing. Doesn't matter who you vote in office, they just take us down the road of destruction. And again, we have for the first time in a very long time, someone in the Oval Office is trying to take us back to our roots, back to where we belong. But if people are going to sit on their rear end and not get up to do something to maintain that, to keep that, to deserve that, then we don't deserve it. And, our founding fathers were clear. When the Constitution was written, they talked about liberty, that one of the purposes of government was to protect the blessings of liberty. Key word, blessings. Liberty is not something you just get because you're a human being. Liberty is not something that any of us really deserve. But liberty is a gift. It's a blessing. And the blessing comes to the nation who decides to live under the law of God. And that's who we are. We are a people. That's our heritage. We decided to live under the laws of nature, and of nature's God. And with that comes responsibility. And there is a process, we can go back into the book of Genesis where God tells us to subdue. And if you study to see what he's talking about, it's to subdue the evil that's in the world, that's already in there, to resist the evil. And on the political end, there's the higher end. This world is controlled by the prince and power of the air. And we're starting to reveal some of the real evil that has been taking place by the individuals who've been running this world, the many nations, for a long time. But anyway, we're to subdue. And we subdue that with justice. It doesn't get any more difficult than that. Justice. Without a court of justice, the nation is gone. It's lost. It has no direction. It has no favor of God. It's just lost. And so, we need to take the direction to the proper place, and that's why we're doing what we're doing. So we need to attack this from all the ways and all by all the tools that our founding fathers gave us to do so. Everyone should join the militia. Everyone. I don't want to say the word join because I was corrected before by that. You should register for the militia. because you already are part of the militia. And if you failed the call for the militia, if anything were to take place, then woe is us and woe is you. But anyway, we should all be part of the militia. Some of us may not be able to be as active as others, so you know, you be as active as you can, but everybody should register within their county locally for potential posse comitatus or for a call to arms to defend our borders and to maintain a government by and for the people. But if the people aren't going to step up and take control to have a government by and for the people, then it doesn't really matter. We need to take back the militia. There is no real true militia at this point in time. There are a few places where some of the reserved, unorganized, they call it, it's the reserved militia here or there trying to do what they have to do. And in those places, we need to join up with those individuals that already started that process. But in any event, everybody should register for the militia and be part of that in their counties. Everyone, at least once in their lifetime, and right now is the time we need good people. Right now is the time when all good people should stand up and do something and become a committeeman, because we need to fill these positions. So everyone should read, go up to our website, nationallibertyalliance.org, highlight people's duty, and read the first page on the militia. It says, become a committeeman. Read that. The second page is the committee members in your county. There's a connection. Once you sign in and join that, you'll be able to see individuals in your state, in your county, and connect with them and start meeting on a grassroots level, which you should all be doing at least once a month. You know, there's 12 times a year. You should come together one evening or one day or whatever you decide as a group, just to come together to discuss these things, the organization of these things, the organizing of the militia, the connection with our sheriffs, working together to become elected committeemen. And of course, we also are building the administrations for the juries, the grand juries, the trial juries. We, the people, need to take control, because right now it's out of control. We're under civil law. The only way to take it back is to bring the people back into the courts and make the rulings and ignore the judge and ignore the prosecutor if necessary and do the right thing and take control. We need to understand the power and the authority of nullification. If we don't like a law, we got the power to nullify it. They know it. You should know it. And what does that tell us? It tells us that we're the law writers. We wrote the law. We're above the law. We're not above God's law, but we're above the law that we gave the authority for Congress to write, the legislation. They're not to write legislation to control our behavior. They're not to write legislation in any way, shape, or form to control us. They do. In 1934, the Rules Enabling Act was passed, and that gave the authority to the United States Supreme Court, who worked with the Bar Association, controlled by the Bar Association, written by the Bar Association, I'm sure, the rules of the court. And Rule 2 said, we don't need common law no more. We don't really need equity anymore. Let's have civil law. So they abrogated common law. They abrogated equity, which is what our Constitution, we the people, the lawmakers, wrote in our Constitution and ordered and empowered them with that jurisdiction, those two jurisdictions only, which cover an array of things, but nevertheless, they decided, well, the people doesn't matter. We'll just make a change because we're the judges, we're the courts, and we're going to do what we want, and people don't know what's good for themselves. They actually say that natural law is dangerous and unjust. In any event, you and me and everyone else, because nobody was paying attention, nobody seems to realize what's going on, very few people do, and we have civil law. You're under Babylonian law. You go up to the websites and read some of this stuff and some of these papers on law, and they'll talk about Roman law. I've talked with lawyers who said, we're under Roman law. And they're right, we are. That's civil law, law of men. and not of God. It's not the law that we wrote. The equity isn't even there anymore, although they do exercise, the codes. But they exercise them not only against the individuals, the bureaucrats, the people who are elected and appointed, but also against us. They have no power or authority to do that. We go under common law. We're judged by the people. But, again, people have forgotten this. They have lost their way. And the people that come to these meetings and the people that are reading our website should be well aware of the problems and should be well aware of the solution. Right on our front page, we have a 24-page paper that lays out the solution. We have to step up and be that solution. We have to become the consent of government. We have to teach our children to become the consenters of government. And unless and until we do that, this republic will just become the democracy they claim that we are. And as a matter of fact, we act like a democracy. So that's where we're at this point. Reality is the way one perceives it. You perceive we're a democracy, we're a democracy. And we're long gone. Again, that's just a cover for an oligarchy, which is controlled by a few individuals behind the scenes. The New World Order, the elite, the rich, the super rich. So anyway, everybody needs to become a committeeman. We are going to have a meeting on Wednesday, 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's on the 18th, a couple of days from now. And for the sole purpose of talking to people about the committeemen, answering questions. And so anybody who is interested in that, I certainly hope everybody is. And I certainly hope everybody that comes is serious about becoming a committeeman. It's no big thing. You don't need no big education. You need to know the things that we talk about right here at National Liberty Alliance. We've got a page up there, a couple of pages. As I said, the page says become a committeeman, the committeeman process, petition process, and the committeeman proposed party rules. Those three particular pages you should go through, watch the videos, read through, and come with your questions. And let's talk about becoming committeemen. Let's start organizing, because now is the time. We must take back the political process. Now, so any questions on that, let's talk about that this coming Wednesday. If you've got any questions tonight, we can talk about it too. But we're going to be focusing in on that, and I'm hoping to see everyone that's here tonight, plus some, at that meeting. The other thing is we'll talk more about the militia at another time. And we've been speaking about it, but we do have a course on the militia. People should take that course. Should take all our courses. We have a course on the militia. We have a civics course, and we have a government by consent course. Those are the things you need to know to do all the things that we do. Those are the things you need to be at least, familiar with and read through it. Read to understand, and, it'll come to mind when necessary, but you'll have the right mindset by the time you go through these things. But in order to do the things we do, to become a jury administrator, if you want to do that. That's a full-time job, by the way. We need 4 people per county, and those 4 people should also become committeemen. There's no conflict of interest. You're the people. We're the power. We're the authority. Problem is we're not taking it up. So let's take it up. But you can become, and you need to join the register with the militia. Get together in your counties, and, 2 or 3 people come together, have a meeting, and start growing, start connecting with us. We'll connect you with more and more people within your state, within your county, within your sister counties. We'll help you grow. You grow yourself. You get other people in the neighborhood involved, and you teach them. We got lots of videos, and we'll be putting. We're going to put a page up. I'm going to try to work on this in the next month or so. Maybe in a month we'll have it up. We'll put a page of certain videos, different instructional videos. So people could have meetings on their in their counties and maybe show a video, then discuss it. Show a PowerPoint which lays out different things, empowering the people, and discuss it. We're writing a plan on how to, we already know, well, a lot of it is probably written already. We're putting together a plan on how to approach the sheriff. And I would say, you know, when you get 6 or 8 or 10, you'll have to figure how many people, a dozen people together. And you've become educated in the things you need to become educated in, which again is civics, government by consent, and the militia. And of course, the committee man process, those four things. Which those three pages we mentioned will teach you all you need to know about that. But of course, there'll be questions, and we'll do the best to have answers. But you need to get together and start becoming active on your grassroots level. And at some point, you know, we will lay out a process of the best way to approach the sheriff. But first, you have to structure yourself properly and lawfully. And we will teach you that. And once you structure yourself properly and lawfully and organizing within your county, then you can go to the sheriff and with power and authority and humility, of course, and win the sheriff onto your side. So we'll get into that kind of a discussion more maybe in the future. If people have some questions, we can discuss somewhat tonight. Let's see what else we have going. Today we want to talk particularly about joinders, but I just want to cover these other things. We're working on a potential indictments on pharma, big pharma. A lot of people know about that. We've got the videos up there for quite a few weeks now. And I just haven't had the time to come together to sit down and write the paperwork on who the targets are and what the charges are. And until I get the time to be able to do that, or if I can get someone else to do it for me, anybody feels that they capable of doing that, we have a couple of affidavits you'd need to read through and pull out the target, the individuals we're bringing up for potential indictment, and make the notes of what they are guilty of. You don't need to know formal charges. If we're going to apply some formal charges on them, we will. Formal meaning, you know, applying codes upon them. And codes can be applied upon them because they are commercial activity with interstate actions and activity. And therefore, we've given the authority to Congress to control that commercial activity and many, many other commercial activities. But also, there's just the pure common law. You know, they have a duty to follow whatever codes, restrictions is written to control their particular businesses. On how they operate and many, many other things. And they have a duty to follow that. We, the people, gave the authority again to legislators to write that. And if we think it's bad, well, we'll just negate it. We'll nullify it. You know, they can bring whatever charges they want. If we don't think the charges fit, we nullify it. We don't like it. Forget about it. It's not law. It's not law in this courtroom today because we make the law. That's what people have to realize. You make the law. When it comes to the law which is equity, you know, which we expect, you know, our courts to enforce through equity courts. We wrote that law. It's called the Constitution. We gave them the authority to write certain law, and if we don't like what they wrote, if they contradict or if it affects our rights, our unalienable rights, we just nullify it, say, no, we don't like it, we're not going to apply it, don't even bring it to the table anymore. And once they get the message, they'll get the message. You know, the one thing they do fear is the people realizing their power and authority. The problem is that people don't realize their power and authority. Because you got to keep the slave dumb. You can't let the slave read. And because once they start to read, once they start to understand, they may rebel. They may see what's going on and say, wait a minute here. You see, they've kept us dumb. They've kept us, they try to demoralize us. They try to destroy our relationship with our maker. They try to destroy our political process with parties. They tell you you have to have a bar attorney and go to a civil court in order to have justice, where there is no justice at all. Status quo always rules. I'll tell you right now, it's endless for the years I've been in courts, endless, just case after case after case, injustice after injustice, injustice. It's just on and on. And And the people don't do nothing. Mostly because they don't know. They're not in the courts. The people who end up in the courts start to get abused, realize what's going on here, and they start looking for help, and some of them find us, and they have a mess, and because they're caught in that web. Because it's all about the status quo. It's not about the people. It's not about justice. But we have to fix it. But they will tell us, you're not smart enough to fix it. They will tell us, you need an education. We're educated. We spend thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars to get our education. You're not as bright as we are. We know what's going on. You just don't know how things work. You just sit there. And people do. Yeah, I could tell you how many cases I go in the courtroom, and you see the cases, the arguments being made, particularly a lot of political arguments, because I've been in a lot of cases and sitting in and listening to a lot of cases where the committee men get in there and do the arguments. But in any event, I watch these arguments, and I look at the people who are being represented by lawyers who are making these arguments. It's like they're in another world, turning around, looking around, who's in here. And I mean, they've trained us well, because that's who we are. We're like little children and being led to slaughter, ultimately. But I promise you, take our courses, you'll have all the necessary ammunition you need, all of the education you need to defend yourself, to make an argument, to step up for liberty, to take power and become the consenters of this great nation, and to take back our heritage, because you've lost your heritage. You've lost it. Most people don't even know what their heritage is. They don't even understand. And the gift of blessings is liberty. And so, you know, when we the people have to face charges, it should only be in a court of law. And the key, you know, the foundation ultimately, or the key point to a court of law, is the only one thing, and that is do no harm. If you don't harm anyone, you should never be brought into a court on any kind of charges. You might be there for maybe an argument, a contractual argument, which we can decide to use an equity court if we want, or have a court of record, which is where the people decide with the jury. But all criminal courts must be by the people. And every jury is tainted. We've written a paper on this, and we've used their jury handbooks on a federal level, the jury grand jury handbooks and the trial handbooks, trial jury handbooks. And it really is really serious. There's no doubt when you go through that. You read that paper, just read the book. There's no doubt every jury is stacked, every single jury. The fix is in. You're going to lose. You can't win unless you have a runaway jury. And unless you got someone in that jury who says, wait a second here, and frees the others in that jury to come up to a decision when they understand it's under their power, their authority to do. And as a matter of fact, it's their duty to do it. Okay, so committeemen, Big Pharma. We're also doing something with the IRS. Anybody has an IRS problem, probably should come to the, let's see. Well, anyway, if you want to attach your problem with the IRS to us, you can send it into intake. First, you just go out to our website, nationallibertyalliance.org, highlight abuse, click on abuse of courts, and read through that page very carefully, follow the instructions, and then you'll be getting the next page that you'll be brought into is a place where you can fill out a form, and it goes to intake at National Liberty Alliance. Jim will get that form. If you want to do something with the IRS, there's specific information on people, what we're looking and what we're doing with the IRS. Anybody has any questions on that, they can ask the questions here on Monday Night Programs. So, but now let's go to the joinders, and this is extremely important. Unfortunately, we get people who come here sometimes and they connect to us and they want us to help, but they have no desire to help others. They just want to deal with their case and move on. And that's not what we're about. Freely we have been given, so freely we must give, and that is the process here. if we're going to give to you, we're expecting you to assist us, because your case depends on us winning back these courts, because you're not going to win. Even with the paperwork that we do, the chances of them being obedient and doing the right thing through fear because of our paperwork, and that does happen occasionally, but I use the word occasionally very rarely. It does happen occasionally, but mostly it doesn't. It angers the judges. It upsets them. Who do these people think they are? And they ignore what we're doing. And we take it through a process, step by step by step by step. I laid out a chart. You can find that chart on your page on abusive courts. And I think it's number 5. It says here, click here to see joined a time chart. It's a PDF for the time duration and judicial process. Anybody who fills out a joint, files a joinder with us, takes about 5 months. It could go a little quicker, though, but we're throwing in around 5 months. So it could be 4 months. But there is a time process. You know, it might take 20 days, you know, communicating back and forth, which it could take only a day or two if you really focus and pay attention, do what has to be done, and follow the instructions that you're given. You can get your joinder in very, very quickly, and the process can start. But once we get your joinder, which is just a paper which states that you want to join us, it's that simple, and we get all your information on the form. For some reason, people keep leaving lots of blanks, and that's what takes time, and the next thing you know, it takes 30 days before we can even get anything into the court for you. But it takes, if you get it done quickly, we can get it done quickly. The amicus curiae is the first thing we file, which is a friend of the court. We're coming in as the grand jury, as a friend to the court on behalf of particularly the petitioner, who's usually defendant, of course, in the courts, and they become a petitioned to us, and we challenge their jurisdiction and make it clear that they lack due process, and therefore they have to let these people go. We tell them, they have the opportunity to argue it, and we'll take that argument. They never do because, they're just so bold, and they believe that they own this whole process and that you don't even deserve to be there. But in any event, that amicus curiae challenges that jurisdiction, and if they don't respond, then they default, and they don't respond, and they do default. So the next process is after that, is to move for cause. And again, this paperwork can flow pretty quickly depending on your communications and paying attention and filling out the paperwork correctly. It can move pretty quickly. But generally speaking, often some of these things take longer because, information missing or people don't follow the instructions correctly or, they get back to you weeks later. And again, we're as interested in your case as you are. That's the bottom line here. If you're really interested in your case and you're pushing it hard, we're with you. If you're taking your time, dragging your rear end, and nonchalant, well, we're not paying attention either then. So it's up to the people to focus up and do what they have to do if they want to join the case. So anyway, the next paper we do is a move for cause. And during that process, when we move for cause, they have to answer questions, and they don't. It gets back to the same thing. We have to get to an affidavit of default. But in between, there's a process of things going on. When we move for cause, the court that we're moving the court from and into the federal court, we're ordering them to cease and desist. They don't. Most of the time, they don't. Okay, and so then we ask for an affidavit. Well, first of all, you have to have an affidavit for the court to proceed and after the move. But you do an affidavit, then we'll give them a warning of contempt, a threat of felony charges if the court continues to proceed. And then after that, of course, after the move for cause, I mentioned there's the affidavit of default. Then comes the decision in order. There's a period of time between these things. And, we figure about 30 days. It could be done quicker. Sometimes it takes a little longer. It depends on how we're busy, how busy we are to do the paperwork, and how many people volunteer to help us. The more people volunteer to help us, the faster we can go with a lot of these things. The more paralegals we can get, and we don't have many of them, but if we can get paralegals, then on the on this side, the legal side, it can run pretty quick. But a lot of people, of course, you know, that come here also, a lot of people have been educated in certain areas and understand somewhat of how the courts work. And, you know, they have a lot of error in them. We had error, too, when we started looking into these things because we fell into all of the garbage out there. You know, it took us some time and realizing the contradictions and started to research and started to look for, you know, the sources. And that's the key. You know, trust but verify. I can't tell you how many times I go to read a paper on a particular subject and I go there and they talk about the thing, whatever the thing is, but they never show you the thing. Okay, if they're going to talk about the Constitution, they'll tell you all about the Constitution and the Second Amendment, but they never get into the words of the Constitution, the words of the Founding Fathers, going into the Federalist Papers to show clearly the meaning, if there's any kind of a concern of what the meaning might really be. And our Founding Fathers, once you lay it, they lay it out through the arguments, through the debates, which is the Federalist and the Anti-Federalist Papers. And when you're done with that, it becomes clear. The Constitution was written very clearly. It's a very short paper, but it's very clear, and it fills a lot of empowers a lot of people, but it also restricts. It lays out their jurisdiction and restricts them to a certain jurisdiction, and gives them a certain amount of authority. And once they go beyond that, and believe me, they have gone far beyond that at every level of government, and the people don't know why. Because if a people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. The people are ignorant. They don't know. They don't see it. You have to become educated. Okay, so going back to the papers here, the joinders, the next thing is a decision and order. If the judge is ignoring that, then an affidavit has to be written. We send a contempt of court. And if that after that they don't respond and do the right thing, then we indict the judge. We bring them up for a potential indictment against the judge. And that's the process. Again, it takes about 5 months, could be done in four maybe, but that's from beginning to end, that's, you know, the every paper, everything you do, you have to give the other side time. Okay? And but here's the key thing. Well, most of these cases, you know, again, there's a chance of winning. We've had wins, a few wins here or there, in habeas corpuses and other things where the court stopped and people were set free or let loose of whatever it is that they were going to take away from their homes or whatever. But that's rare. You get a judge with, I don't want to say maybe conscience, but I doubt that, probably fear, the realization that the jig's up. We're exposing their sin in their court. They see it, they know it, they fear it, and maybe they see that the swamp is being drained. Or maybe they remember why they wanted to become a lawyer and a judge in the first place. I mean, people are corrupted right out of school. The school is there to train corrupt people, to train people to become corrupt. Corrupt in applying civil law in place of natural law. So, in any event, the real thing that we're really doing, you know, with all these cases, it's all evidence. Every one of these cases, anybody who joins us, whether it's with these different cases, maybe it's a non-judicial foreclosure case or a traffic case or some other case, maybe or people with habeas corpuses that are in prison and many other different kinds of cases, CPS, APS, whatever. All these cases are proof of the fraud, proof of the conspiracy on a huge level within all 94 federal district courts, all state courts, right on down to the county courts and even into the town courts. Fraud operating under civil law and not natural law. And people don't even know it. And our liberty is at jeopardy. People say they have civil rights. Well, you can have all the civil rights you want. I have no part of that. I have unalienable rights. People say they have constitutional rights. You can have all the constitutional rights. I don't want no part of it. I have unalienable rights. And some of my unalienable rights are protected by the Bill of Rights. And they're to be obedient, and we need to hold their feet to the fire. So we need to educate ourselves to do that. We need to get rid of our ignorance and have knowledge. Be empowered. That's the ammunition. That's the arms we need, is the power of the word, the power of the pen, and bringing that power into the court and accomplish our goal. We need to reach at least 30,000 people active, and we're nowhere near that. We got 8,000 people, but 8,000 people are not active. People have good intentions. They never seem to follow through. Again, I think that's all by design. They've trained us that way in our schools. I'm thankful not to have much of a formal education at all. And most people who have formal educations, they get all lost in all of this garbage, especially if you're running, you know, going into law. And there, of course, many, many other places have the same problem, but we're dealing with the law. That's the process, and people need to be realistic about this. They need to understand. We don't have the magic wand. Trump has the magic wand. But we will have the magic wand if we get the court back. We'll have the rod of God is what we'll have. We'll have justice. We got our courts back. We will have justice in our courts. We will have justice in Congress, justice in the Senate, justice in the administrative office, justice in our state legislators and our governors. We will have justice throughout this nation if we bring back the law of God into our courts. And the rod of the law is there. We will have justice throughout this nation, and we will flourish for that. And other nations will respond to that in a positive manner. But again, the only way any of these things can happen is if the people do it. But getting back to this here, Joinders, okay, the key to this thing is the success is really going to be for most of us is when the deep state is finally eradicated. The swamp completely drained, deep state eradicated, and the people move into the... That's when the people can move into the courts, because at that point in time, there will be a power vacuum. People who are controlling these positions will be in jail or gone, right, hiding under a rock or whatever, okay? But someone must take up these positions. And if we allow our elected, our servants to take those positions, they will only become our masters again. And we'll be right back where we started from. And our children will end up in slavery. So, again, you must respond. You have a duty to respond. If you're hearing this message and you understand what I'm talking about and you understand at least half of these things, you know you have a duty to do something. So anyway, on the Joinders, people need to understand the real success for most of it's going to be once we take the courts back. That will happen sometime after the deep state is totally eradicated. So I'm kind of hoping this year sometime. And that's when we'll take all things back. But again, we do need enough people behind us in the right positions to take these things. We can take 100% control of this entire nation, both political and judicial, with 30,000 people who are serious. You know, Thomas Jefferson, I believe it was, it said, I got to look this up. I'm pretty sure I did recently, and I keep forgetting, but I'm pretty sure it's Thomas Jefferson. We don't have government by the majority. We have government by the majority that participates. And if 30,000 of us participate, we outnumber them. We take control because we are the people, and we have the true power, the controls of the political process through taking back the committee men, control of the judicial process by taking back our courts and the administration of our juries, and bringing back a court of law, which is concealed. You can't find a court of law in America. There's only one court of law, only one court of record open anywhere in America that I'm aware of. I can't believe that. I don't know of any other, okay? And that's the one we opened up in the Northern District. And we were very careful how we put that and worded it, and by God's mercy, they took it on, and they allowed it to be for some time. And then all of a sudden they tried to throw us out, but they've never really been successful. Now, it is true that they have concealed our case up on PESA, okay? And that's a crime. They've concealed our cases and papers that we filed in courts, and they removed them. That's a crime, and we intend 100% on indicting every single one of those judges who have committed those crimes of concealment, removal, destroying of any legal or lawful process. And that's what they have done. They have concealed common law. They gave us civil law, and we live with it. They've taken away our unalienable rights. They've given us civil rights, rights from men. And when men give you rights, men can take away your rights. And we live with it. We tolerate it. How much longer are we going to go with this? The call to action is now. This is the time to move. Things are moving so quickly with what the work of Trump right now. Anybody that's watching, 22 report. Anybody that keeps, X-22 or the other one is, what is that other one called? I forget what it's called. Anyway, we do have that news station up on our page. But those two particular, okay, if you don't have time to watch much news, if you watch those two guys, they come out for about 40 minutes a day. Sometimes they'll throw an extra one out there, 15-minute one, something special coming up, or if they do an interview, a couple interviews a week here or there. But if you don't have time to watch the news anyway, you watch there and you see what's going on. And we are at a point where things are about to change. But the question is, are the people prepared to take control when that change comes? Are we educated enough to do that? Are we willing to do that? Are we positioned enough? Are we organizing ourselves on our grassroots level to do that, to take back the controls so that we can have government by consent? BCP, by the way, is what it is, Black Conservative Patriot. He calls himself BCP, and he really gives a lot of great information. X-22 report gives a lot of behind-the-scenes education and, information, what's going on, the news. So anyway, we're close, but we're not ready. We got to get ready. Now is the time. And these cases, they're going to succeed once we take control, seize control of the courts. Those indictments will be honored. These cases will be dealt with and justly. And people will be compensated for the things that were taken away from them. Some things we can never be compensated. Money could never pay it all, especially the people who've lost their children or their parents in some of these courts where they've taken control of our parents and their money and the things that they worked for their children. And some fat cat lawyer and a judge and a few other people, They just eat out that substance. They just take it in and eat it out and fill their pockets. They line their pockets. So anybody, again, with joinders, you need to understand there are people that are coming in and they're not paying attention. They're not coming. If you got a joinder, you need to be here Monday nights. You need to be here. And if you've joined and if you can't be here, you need to download our MP3s and listen to it during the week. It's a three-hour program every Monday. But you need to keep up to date what's going on. You need to ask questions. You need to get answers. I used to listen to an open forum many, many years ago, a very wise individual who was running that open forum. I learned a lot from that person. And I never called in to ask a question because I was so fascinated by the questions other people ask. And any questions I had, seemed someone brought it up, so I just listened, And so you grow by listening. Listening is the best. If you got a question, you ask it. And if we don't have the answers, we'll find it. National Liberty Alliance is not interested in being a top-down organization. We want to be a bottom-up organization. National Liberty Alliance needs to be the servant to the people. We need to be a place for people to get an education, for the people to come to work together with others, to connect with others, to organize, and to communicate, and most importantly, to educate. And so that's what we're here for. We'll continue to be here for. Even though we've taken control on the upper level in the courts through the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, because we have to deal with the enemies, both foreign and domestic, who have seized control of our nation, and that's why we created this whole process the way we did. For those who don't know, we went to every county in America with the exception of some rural areas, you know, where really nobody there, maybe some mooses or something. But, you know, every county in America we visited, and we spoke about what we're doing, and we got good response. We're, you know, trying to bring back the common law, and the common law juries, grand juries and trial juries. And the response was great. And we organized in every state. We have state coordinators in every state. And they work together with people in their state, the other county organizers, and they work together to form a unified state grand jury, unified New York state grand jury, unified New Jersey state grand jury, unified Texas state grand jury, and so on. All 50 states, including, of course, Alaska and Hawaii. And all 50 of those unified state grand juries came together to form the unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. All those grand juries have a seal and an address. And so does the unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. There's power in numbers. When we write our papers as the people, we are the people across America. We are the people. You can't get more organic than the grand jury that we rose up from the people. You can't get more organic than that. They know it. And they understand what a common law grand jury means to them. They understand. It means justice. And they're in trouble. And they know it. So we have to take this back. People need to get involved. You need to join the militia. You need to register for the militia in your county. You know, that's where you're connected, in your county, to the people. And once you organize enough, you connect with the sheriff. And he will see you as constituents, you know. And you get with the committee men. And once the committee men are in place, you take it all. When you take your county back with the committee men, and you have the chair, you know, which is the committee chair, and the co-chair, and there's a small group, I think they call the administrative, okay. When that group of four or five people that controlled, that are the head, voted in to be the head, or they, you know, they were either elected, and maybe nobody else underneath them is elected, then they're all appointed, could be trained and taught to be elected. But when those individuals that have the control of the committee within that county makes a phone call to any elected individual that is represented somewhere in that particular election districts, like the county, for instance, the sheriff, you call up the sheriff, hey, sheriff, we'd like to have coffee with you. You know, this is the county chairman. Oh, yeah, okay, what time? Where do you want to meet? You will get response, and they will be a servant, and they will recognize you as the master. That's a fact. That's a fact right now. The problem is these people aren't elected, and these are party bosses, and they're crooked. And they don't want the sheriff to be sheriffing. They don't want the commissioners to be commissioning. You know, because they got too many things going on, and they don't need nobody to be looking into these things, because maybe someone might come up with the idea of justice. So, again, we need to fix these problems, and it's fixed through education, through understanding how things work, and then stepping up to do it. We all need to step up to do it. So, I certainly hope to see as many people as here tonight, and we've got quite a few people here tonight already. And we got the radio that goes out. We don't know how many people are listening to that. We got people who do download the MP3s and listen during the week. I certainly hope to see everybody this Wednesday, the 18th, at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, for questions and answers on the committee men, and for us to assist you in the process to answer the questions that you don't have the answers to, when to run, how to run. You know, we've got all the information on the pages, but there'll be some blank spots and you need to ask some questions, and it'll all come together. It's all logical. It's all just, it's all obvious. Once it's laid out how this thing works, you say, wow, that makes all the sense in the world. This is how government should run, you know. Remember, our founding fathers, they created and formed a nation unlike none other in the world today. And the liberties that we have, the authority that we the people have that people don't know, okay, We have the only lawful government of the world. You want to find another lawful government? The only other lawful government ever to have existed on planet Earth was around 1600 BC, the nation of Israel. That was the first. I'm unaware of any before. That was the first. If it was so, I'm sure God would have told us in the Bible, and he hasn't, so that was the first. And here we are at the other end of things, and Israel is my son. That's what the Bible tells us. It's the children of God. That's what Israel is. Israel is my son. When Moses went to declare, to free Israel, the message was, God said, go tell Pharaoh, Israel is my son. Let my son go. And God will fight for you if we are the sons of God. And that's what America is all about. America was built by the sons of God. And yeah, there were other people who were not necessarily connected in that way to God, but they were willing to participate. They saw the righteousness. They saw the logic. They saw the obviousness. They knew it was true and right. And they wanted to be part of that. And so the atheist is welcomed. And any religion is welcome. Non-religion, it doesn't matter. And you can become whoever you want. You're president of the United States. The thing is you got to raise your hand, take that bow, and the law of the land brings us to the law under nature's God, and you cannot ever take that away. And our inalienable rights are given by God and could never be taken away. Anything repugnant to the law of God, like abortion and many other things, is null and void. Anything that is repugnant to the Bill of Rights, any of our unalienable rights, is null and void. That's the ruler by which we read our founding papers, is that Bill of Rights. If it's repugnant to anything in that Bill of Rights, it's null and void. And if people need to understand that, to step up, say, hey, you can't do that. That's not lawful. People need to step up to say, Judge, you need to recuse yourself because you're protecting the status quo and not the people. When we go to federal courts, when a person brings a case to a federal court, the only cases they can hear is anything that's violated under the Constitution. And in the case of the people, it's usually and it's always pretty much. I mean, very rarely anything else. I mean, there are some other things, but basically, it is for a rights violation. And so, when we go to the federal courts, we're not expecting them to find against us. No, they must rule for us. If our right of due process is not being given and we do an affidavit and they don't rebut that affidavit or they can't prove that they're a court of record or they can't prove that they've given us due process, that judge has a duty to do something about that and order that case to shut down and to return what our wherefore clause that we took it in, to return that person back to their original state of being and also compensate them for the damages done to them and for the violations of their unalienable right of due process, the right to be heard. And you don't get those things in courts of men. And you have courts of men. You have civil courts. We have the one and only that I'm aware of, common law court, a court of record, the true court of record, stands on common law. And our winning depends upon the people. On our front page, first thing you see, only the people can save America. Only you can do it. And it doesn't matter how busy you are. You can take out once a month. Maybe you'll miss a meeting here or there from time to time. That's fine. But you can take out once a month to go to a local meeting on the grassroots level. You could take out 2 years of your life, which you'll only spend about 30 to 40 hours that every year. It's a two-year thing for the committee men. So you're going to have about 40 hours, if that, that you're going to have to participate. And that's around election time, generally. It's the beginning of the year when you first get elected. You come to a state meeting to form all of the necessary committees. It's a one-day process. So it's an all-day affair, usually a Saturday, of course. And once that's done, your real business is to come together during the election times to see who you're going to put in the ballot, to interview people. So you come together on a particular night that you choose, at a particular time that you choose, for 2 hours or whatever you choose, and you interview these people. Why do you want to become elected in that position? What do you know about that position? How much jurisdiction do you have? Where does your jurisdiction end on that? What do you know about the Second Amendment? Tell me your thoughts on the Fifth Amendment. You know, quiz these people. If they don't know those answers, send them to get educated. Go to National Liberty Alliance, take the courses, come back. We'll talk to you next time. If you could do it before, you know, this election period is up and we can get you on the ballot, we'll put you on the ballot. But you can't get in unless you become a statesman. In order to become a statesman, you got to know when you raised your hand what you're raising your hand to swear upon, which is that Constitution, to support and defend it. And you need to know what it is in order to support and defend it. Otherwise, how can you? Why does the sheriff always go to the county attorney? Always goes to the county. Very rare where they don't. When they have a situation, a question of law. That attorney doesn't know law. That attorney knows civil law. It has nothing to do with us. That sheriff needs to bone up. He needs to learn what's going on. He needs to learn the Constitution. He needs to step up and be the law of that county. And we can help them do that. We don't have to badger them into doing that. We can help them doing that if we do the process right. We will teach the process, you know, as we go step by step. That sheriff will desire to become part of what you're doing on that grassroots level. At some point, if you're structured right and you do it lawfully, and he sees the logic and the obviousness and the lawfulness of it. And as you're training them to come into the meetings and they're hearing these things, and you get them to our courses that we have up there, the courses on the militia, the courses on civics, the courses on consent of government, which contains, of course, the constitutional course. But until we do these things, we will continue to be subjects to them. As the 14th Amendment tells us so clearly, you are subject to the jurisdiction therein. I am not subject to the jurisdiction therein. I am subject to the law of God. I'm subject to the true law, the one and only law. And, you know, I was speaking about the only lawful nations. This nation came to be because we, the people, went to God and covenant with God by the Declaration of Independence with a desire to live under His law and his blessings, the blessings of what he is offering, which is true liberty. And by going to him and making that covenant with him to create this nation under God, and this is very clear. You read through the Declaration of Independence, it is extremely clear that this is a covenant with God. You read the preamble to the Constitution, and it is clear not only how it's structured, but it comes from the blessings of God. Without the blessings of God, there is no liberty. You must be blessed by God. You cannot have it without it. People may think they can. They'll formulate it. It's just the minds of men, and they're only going to become to naught, and the next mind of the next man will be the next tyrant, and it goes on and on and on and on and on. We are the only lawful nation. We are a republic. Republic is the public thing. It focuses in on the law. It focuses in on a constitution. We're a people of law. The question is, what law? There are 51 jurisdictional laws in Black's Law Dictionary. 51. One of them is called law. Only one is called law. And that's the nature's God. That's his law. That's the only one. There's no other called law. Although it has the name of law, it's really positive law. And as you study, it's clear. It's the laws of men. It's legislative law. The other law, the second law, is equity. And the only true equity is equity that is created through legislation that has proper authority and executed by a court that has proper authority. Without that proper authority, it's not even equity. And we fall under American jurisprudence, okay? We received our authority from God to live a nation under him, and he gave us the authority, go back to Genesis, subdue. He was given to us in order for us to have to live under his law, do no harm, okay? We become a morally minded people. That's a prerequisite. You're not a morally minded people, you'll never have liberty, you'll never have a proper a lawful government. You just can't have it. It's not yours. You can't have it. You just can't have it. But we received the command We responded with a covenant. We wrote a constitution. We, the people, ordained and established this constitution for the United States of America. And in those things, there are six things. Hopefully I'll bring this maybe to an end on this. But there are six things that we cover in the preamble. And I'm just going to read it. It's one paragraph. I'm sure most of us have heard this. Need to think about this. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, at the time it wasn't very perfect. They lacked a lot. That's why they had to come together with this. And bear in mind, if the Constitution doesn't fulfill one of these six things in the preamble, then they have no business doing it. Okay? Let me repeat this. If whatever they're doing, legislators, whatever they're doing, whatever anybody in government is doing, it is not fulfilling one of these six points in the preamble, they shouldn't be doing it. We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, to establish justice, what are they doing to establish justice? To ensure domestic tranquility, what are they doing to ensure our domestic tranquility? To provide for the common defense, to promote the general welfare, and the most important one, and to secure the blessings of liberty. Our founding fathers used the word blessings. As a matter of fact, in mine, I'm looking, I never noticed this before, the word blessings, the B in the blessings is capitalized. I don't know if that's true. It says it's done in the original thing with the caps and everything, so I guess it is. The blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. And we do ordain and we do establish this Constitution for the United States of America. Who ordains? We, the people, ordained this Constitution. We're the kings. Ultimately, God is the king. He's the sovereign of the universe. But he has blessed us with a kingship, little k. And we have 12 kings that sit on a tribe as a tribunal in every court to do the will of the lawmaker, which is God. And it's written in your heart. Everybody knows, even people who are not Christian, they know what's right and wrong. They know if they've harmed somebody. Do no harm. That's simple. Thou shalt not kill. Don't steal. So, you know, we are the kings. We have to take... So we're the boss, okay? We're the masters, and they're the servants. But when you listen and watch and talk to these people, it seems that they're the masters and we're the servants. We're always there with a bowed head being beat up in their courts of injustice. God asks us, why do you keep going to their courts of injustice? I refuse to go to their courts of injustice now. I will only go to a common law court. I will do everything I can to turn any case that I'm involved with into a common law court. And that, you know, every case we battle, that's the first battle we have to win. We have to fight the judge. And we, you know, and again, you know, we've been thrown out time after time after time after time after time. They don't care about the injuries. They don't care about justice. They just don't want to hear us because we're going to tell them of their sins. We're going to reveal their evil just by how that court is operating. They maintain the status quo. They don't want to hear that. They refuse to do the just thing. They don't want to hear that. They think that they're above the law. They don't want to hear that. But the way you run a court of record, all those things, they surface. And I guess it's too much for them to bear. Plus the fear of going to jail if we finally take control. Are we going to take control? Are we going to put these people in jail? We're going to get rid of these people? We're going to bring back a government by the consent of the people, by the will of the people, under the law of God? Being a just nation, morally minded, and befriending other nations, trading with them. And, you know, look at, when you share the gospel, you share good things. That's sharing the gospel. And when one nation does good to another nation, I mean, look what Trump did when we're going through this problem here with the coronavirus. And Iran, okay, offering help. They don't want help, but we're going to offer them anyway. They're the enemy. We're going to offer it to them, and because that's the right thing to do. Bless those who curse you. Do good things to those who who say all kinds of terrible things and treat you unjustly, because that's what the gospel teaches us anyway. And if we're going to throw that out, you can't have liberty, you can't have this constitution, you can't have this nation, you cannot be under God. All right, anyway, two meetings this week, extremely important. Oh, the other one is at 9 p.m. We've been giving people free access to our area where we ask for premier memberships, where premier membership is a person who pays $5 a month or more. And some people, you know, they can't afford that $5 a month. But we want to talk to all those those people. And we're going to have a meeting on 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, because it's unfortunate, I believe, and the leadership of National Liberty Alliance agrees, that we have people abusing that. And so we'd like to talk to people. If you're going to get free access, we require you to be responding. We require you to be here at our Monday night meetings. We require that you be educating yourself and using the free access that we've given you. We require you to, you know, depending on your situation, to be as active as you can, even if it's an hour a week, okay? I mean, if you're not working, you have no income, you got time. Give it to us. I give all my time to National Liberty. This is the only thing I do. I've left, I've retired for this purpose, and I'm not the only one. There are people that are retired. This is all they do. They've given all their time to this. Everybody can give an hour. Everybody can give an hour. We need people to make phone calls, maybe doing research. We've got different committees doing different things. We've got a new thing coming up with the states, which we'll introduce in the next couple of weeks. And we have someone come in to speak to you about this. And it really is focusing in on a lot with the committeemen, because it works together with something that this particular group is doing with the states, to bring the states back into order, to bring back, to get rid of, to nullify the 17th Amendment, which took away the sovereignty of the states, the clip sovereignty of the states. Okay, I guess that's it. Jan, is Jan here? Do we have any questions or anything here? Or any other announcements that need to be made?
Jan is not here tonight. Okay. He's running late. He tried to get home on time, and he put me here. I have two questions.
Okay.
If you want to hear them, you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Question the first. Let's see. I got to get my clicks in the right places. Would NLA take the position that only our Creator God is sovereign and no man is sovereign?
Well, that is the position we have, but remember, you know, God tells us, he mentions this numerous times in the Bible, have I not said ye are gods? Okay, we are gods. If we are children of God, because God is God, and if we're his children, we're little gods. But he uses the little g, of course, and he's talking about his children, those who have an earnest, ongoing desire to learn and do the will of the Lord, and will do no harm, and uplift the Savior. So, through that, he has given us and blessed us with liberty. Remember, he has given us, and again, we therefore are sovereign in this world, but only because God has made us sovereign. Okay? And remember, in Genesis, he told us to subdue. So we have to, we're here to subdue. What are we here to subdue? We're here to subdue evil. How do you subdue evil? With justice, with the gospel ultimately, but with justice. That's how you subdue evil. You bring evil into a just court, and it's going to be subdued. It's going to be done away with. It's going to be suppressed. And so we are sovereign. But also, you know, we formed three branches of government on the federal level, and we vested them with certain authorities and powers. We vested them. And therefore, they have a clipped sovereignty because they act on our behalf for the state. And of course, the administration deals with the world. The president deals with the world. And the courts are supposed to exercise the judgment of God, ultimately, through the people, through juries, or the equity through a judge. and equity are the is enforcing the codes upon elected and appointed individuals. So there's a lot of different levels of sovereignty, but there is really only one true sovereign, and that one true sovereign has given us the blessings of liberty and given us the sovereignty to create our own nation, to have government by consent, and we have given them a little bit of sovereignty in order to exercise their authorities and jurisdictions, and the same thing runs down into the states. Okay, it's the same process, the same, you know, three branches of government and so on. So I guess that's the answer. But God is the only one true sovereign.
Okay. Next question. What does the U.S. Constitution say about declaring a national state of emergency?
Well, there are certain things. I can recall one thing in particular when it talks about in state of emergency where habeas corpus can be set aside and to put down any kind of a resistance. What do they call it? I'm looking for that.
Rebellion?
A rebellion, that's the word, yes. Let me see if I can find this quick and just read it. Full faith. I think it was in 9. I think that's where it is. Article 1-9. Hang on 1 minute. Article 1, section 9, I think it is. Okay, here's one of the things, but it also talks about rebellion in another place. The privilege of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended unless when in the cases of a rebellion or invasion the public safety may require it. And of course, we're to put down insurrection. I know that's in here, too. I'm not sure exactly where. I see Brent is here if he wants to comment a little bit further on this, but those are the two things that I can think of. They have a duty to put down a rebellion, we may be seeing that soon, I think on a very, very limited scale, once the arrests start taking place. I trust things will go forward correctly as long as they follow the book being the Constitution. So, all right, any other questions?
Nope, that's all the questions. And okay. Gerard and Brent are both here.
Okay, Gerard, you want to take the controls here, and we'll bring Brent up first. Are you here and ready? And anybody has any questions or comments, you can get into the queue. Star 6, and then a 1, I believe it is, to get into the queue. Okay, I'll pass the controls to you first. I'll make the announcement. Brent, are you here and ready? You got the mic?
He's there. I saw him.
All right, let me get him unmuted. Maybe he's having a problem. Let me try unmuting him. You're unmuted, Brent.
Yes,
Okay. I think you,
yes.
You just had to do star 6 to mute and unmute, I believe. So, are you on a phone?
Yes. Can you hear me? I don't know if I'm being heard.
I can hear you. Yeah.
Oh, good, good. No, the mute didn't work for me, so thanks.
Okay, well, let me introduce you. This is Brent Winters. He's going to talk to us for a while. Brent Winters is the author of The Excellence of the Common Law. And Brent, you got the mic. And Rod, you got the board.
And thank you, Terry, for telling me I'm a little loud. I'll try to tone it down a little. And Brent Allen Winters, you can find me at commonlawyer.com. Just type in common lawyer. I come right to the top. There's a website there. You can listen to me talk. I think there are a couple hundred MP clips there. Let me talk now. Cows come home. You can hear me on the radio 3 hours a day. It'll tell you to do that. And now, thanks to the efforts of others, I'm on Patriot Soapbox on Thursdays and maybe on Tuesdays. I don't know. But I know I'm on Thursdays. And my comments here are my own. They may or may not agree. My comments may or may not agree with the principles and the leadership of National Liberty Alliance. But they're kind enough to let me talk, so they probably figure I won't say anything too far out. Well, I pictured today all the things that happened. Lady from up in Washington told me she was in the bank. Up in Washington, not D.C., the other Washington. She was in the bank, and the place was crowded, and people were taking their money out. Got word that one of the bigger towns at home, where the old land grant agricultural school is. They closed it down, shut the borders, put out an ordinance, couldn't sell liquor or firearms or ammunition. And then I got word from somebody today, all meetings, and I was scheduled for this trial. The United States Constitution on trial. Brent Allen Winters, that's yours truly, for the defense of the Constitution, and Ted Weiland for the prosecution, to try to prove that the Constitution of the United States was unbiblical. We'd been working a long time trying to get the order of the trial ironed out so it would be good. We had the YouTube. We were going to run it live on YouTube. We had it all set up out on the Ozark Hills. Big crowd promoted in the all over Missouri on the radio, talk radio. And then Missouri says, can't have any public meetings. Shut her down. So we're shut down for the time being. And all these things happening. And I was relaxing, trying to relax before this presentation. And a song kept playing over and over in my head like a record that was broken. Certain lyrics just kept going over. And for you younger folks, a record is one of those plastic things we used to put on a record player and go round and round, and it'd play a song. And if you get a dust scratch in it, the needle would jump and it'd keep playing the same thing over and over again. The song kept going around in my head, and it brought back visions of me back in the late 1950s. Little boy, a little church house called White Oak, out in the middle of nowhere. Church house, 5-6 pews on each side. Me sitting on one side, propped up between two men in ties. One of them was my granddad, and the other his brother. He was an auctioneer at the livestock auction barn. And I remembered the words of the song they were singing. And I remember how boring it seemed at the time. And how I thought these old folk here, these grown-ups, I call them, they don't care what they're singing. Doesn't mean anything to them. But all of this song, which I never tried to memorize, I heard it so many times at church, it kept going over and over in my head. Today, this evening. And I thought, that's odd. Song doesn't strike me as anything fun to listen to, but I know the words because they were put in my head when I was so little. It goes like this. In light of all the things that are happening, there's a great day coming, a great day coming. There's a great day coming by and by. Are you ready for that day to come? Are you ready? This is the refrain. Are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready for the judgment day? Are you ready? Are you ready for the great, great judgment day? And then it talks about a bright day coming, a bright day coming. Are you ready for that day to come? So there's a judgment day and there's a bright day. Well, I got to thinking about that. Of course, I know a lot more now than I did then. And isn't it something? Isn't it something that those words mean something to me now? They mean something to me, and I have to conclude they probably meant something to those adults, those grown-ups, as we called them, back then. They just didn't show a lot of emotion. But there's a day coming, and before the the greatest day that comes, there are a lot of little days that come that are judgment days. Well, there's no question in my mind that we've run out of credit in America. We've been running on fumes for a long time. We've been sliding along on the coattails of folks that were smarter than us. We've been pretty stupid for a long, long time. How do you get out of a mess like this? Somebody told me today they'd heard reports that they're considering shutting down the interstate highways. Well, if they shut down the interstate highways, well, you know what that'll mean. Are they going to shut down the airlines? Well, yeah, I'm hearing about that too. They shut down our meeting in Missouri. This is Missouri, the show me state, where they claim they don't believe anything until they can see it with their own eyes. Well, they're taken in by the stupidity. I think it's sad, but here we are. We got to deal with it. What do we do? Well, the old song said, are you ready? Are you ready? An old Anglo word, very simple word, readiness. Readiness, do you have anything to eat? You have plenty to drink. The water gets shut off. We're awful dependent, aren't we? Awful dependent. I told my father, I said, what are you filling this well for over on this one old place we had? I said, of all the things we've tore down here, it was my granddad's old place. A farm where the barn used to be, we farm all that. It's all farm ground. Why fill the well? Somebody put out a lot of work to fill out. What if this rural water district that just went in, now see they're taking water. We used to drink water out of wells and cisterns, and now it's the rural water district. What if somebody decides to shut that water off and you haven't got a well? Why fill the well? I don't think that the older generation, they're so older. Well, I am the older generation. Am I kidding? I mean, the generation older than me. I don't know. I think that they still have a pretty positive view of things. And they were able to prosper when prospering was just a matter of going to work. And they didn't fear. They didn't fear the government. The government just fought the war, the big war. And they won the big war. And America is sitting on the top of the hill, king of the mountain. The gorilla in the room, and we were right, and the communists were wrong. And the communists, they were the ones that were the problem. Well, are they still? Oh, they're still the problem. Just now, it's here. It's not over there. All of that vermin and that slime is here, and it's not lost on me. It's a matter of being susceptible to the septicness of it all. Septicness. The infection, the fear that they impose. There's one thing that'll shake up the useful idiots of evil empire more than anything else, and that is you not being shook up. Don't be shook up. Listen. And you know that you've got to deal with the useful idiots of the evil empire. You've got to deal with what they do when they, the fearful crowd, get their fingers on the levers of power, which they have in many instances, locally and throughout, and they get sucked into the hype and the madness. What do you do? Well, are you ready? If you aren't ready, get ready best you can. Don't depend upon your own brains. Your own cleverness ain't going to get you anywhere against the evil that is constantly taking its nips at us, and then it sometimes boils over. Pot blows the lid off, and in time it gets put back. Well, way of getting ready, we were talking about the militia, the four militia clauses of the United States Constitution. This fellow that I was getting ready to go to trial with, I've listened to dozens and dozens and dozens of hours of him teaching. And he teaches, as one fellow told me, a friend of mine, said, I mentioned it, I said, he's persuasive, he's winsome, winsome. He said, yes, he is. He is. It sounds all so good. It's all so logical. It's also elegant. It's also balanced, his presentations. The only problem is he's depending on logic and not fact. Logic. Don't be sucked in either by these folks that want to tell you how important critical thinking is. You'll do the critical thinking when the time comes. Your life, liberty, or property is in the sling. Your neck is in the noose. Your brain will work okay. Don't worry about that. As long as you don't get afraid, your brain won't work at all. But if you get afraid, you don't even remember the facts. It's the facts that are important, and this fellow's going up against. He's missing the facts. Is he sincere? I think so. But he's missing the facts. When you go to trial in America in a common law court, that's the way our courts are. I mean, people say, oh, they're not common law courts anymore. Oh, yeah, they are. They are, in this sense, especially. And this is a big difference between us and the rest of the world. The rest of the world rests upon logic in their tribunals. Oh, yeah, logic. Yeah, they got the experts in there because they know how to think and train their minds. They call them civilians. Yeah, that's the name of a lawyer of the law of the city all over the world, civilian. Civilian means city. It's a Latin word. It has to do with the city. The great civilians of the world, the judges, well, I don't like to call them lawyers because that's not what they are. They don't deal with law. They deal with scholasticism and logic. You go to court in a common law country like ours, I said it was a common law court. If a court is a common law court, they may call it a lawsuit, but it's not a lawsuit. No, not at all. It's a fact suit. You don't ask the jury, what's the law? You don't ask them that. No, you ask them, who done it? Why'd he do it? What'd he do it with? Where'd he do it? Facts. You want the jury to tell you the facts. Because the facts are what drive everything. Not the logic. The logic takes care of itself. You tell me people don't know how to think and they got to be trained, hogwash. Most logical thinking people I know never went to school hardly at all. My father being one of them, by the way. Tell me about logic. Merriman, professor of law at Bolt Hall, Berkeley Law School, California. Merriman, now gone. Great comparative lawyer. He said this. When men focus on logic, facts have a way of receding from consideration. When men focus on logic, facts have a way of receding from consideration. Boy, have I seen that all my life. Going to school, to think the people that men, dinky doctors and pucky professors, that think they're smart. Why do they think they're smart? Because they're so logical. That doesn't mean a pinch of dried owl droppings. And believe me, there's not much left in owl droppings that's worth anything. No, their digestive tract gets it all. Well, let's go to maybe I got half my time left. Talk about these, about the militia clauses. Common law, homeland safety. Homeland safety. Listen to this. This is Granville Sharp. Who's he? Granville Sharp. Granville Sharp's quite a fellow. He didn't go to school much either. He was an Englishman. He didn't go to school much. No, he was probably a Scotsman. He was a Brit, let's put it that way. He didn't go to school much. But he became a foremost scholar of New Testament Greek. Yeah. And he put to shame the professors in the universities of Germany. He noticed things nobody else noticed before. He shut down. He didn't call them heretics, but he shut down folks that had been misinterpreting, clearly, the Greek New Testament for centuries. He was an Englishman. He did a study. He had an inquisitive mind. He did a study on what is the militia, the third fare, as the old common law used to call it, the militia. In England, and that's the militia that our Constitution bespeaks, is the common law understanding of the militia. He said this, no Englishman can be truly loyal who opposes the principles of English law, whereby the people are required to have arms in defense and peace for mutual as well as private defense. The laws of England always required the people to be armed, and not only armed, but to be expert in arms. Now notice here the phrase, the people. This was before the Constitution of the United States. And he's an Englishman, or a Brit, in England, and he's talking about the people. And what does he say about the people? Remember the preamble, we the people? He says here, the people requires this of the people. To do what? To be armed. And not only armed, but required to be expert in arms. By the way, at common law, that means at your own expense. At your own expense. No, you don't wait for the government to buy you a firearm. You buy it yourself. Are you ready? Have you got a firearm? Ammunition? Have you taken a training course that teaches you marksmanship and safety? No, I said that backwards. That teaches you safety and then marksmanship. Have you done that? I talked to a lady recently, friend who likes to go to the range. She serves some has served some as a rangemaster. And they had a fellow there that was a cowboy of some kind. I mean, he wasn't a cowboy. He was cowboying. And his firearm went off, hit the deck, fortunately, ricocheted up, didn't hurt anybody. They manhandled him out of there. Forthwith. Firearms are dangerous. Safety comes first. You should be a little bit afraid of a firearm. You should be have a shying attitude toward it. Why? Because familiarity breeds contempt. Here, listen to Dan Webster. He's our own American. He's not an Englishman, not a Brit. He said this, nothing will ruin the country, talking to the United States. Nothing will ruin the country if the people themselves will undertake its own safety. And nothing can save it if they leave that safety in the hands of any but their own. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Our Second Amendment is a crisp and clear personal statement of our common law tradition's personal right to keep and bear arms, our foundation of local peace and national defense. As the First, Second, Fourth, Fifth, and Sixth Amendments, the Second Amendment is brief because when drafted, no explanation was needed. Now, keep it in mind, he who never quotes is never quoted. I'm going to make another quote here. Now, this quote here is from the Supreme Court. Supreme Court of the United States says this, the framers of our Constitution were born and brought up in the atmosphere of common law, thought and spoke its vocabulary. When they came to put their conclusions in the form of fundamental law in compact draft, they expressed themselves in terms of the common law, confident that they could be shortly and easily understood. Therefore, the language of the Constitution, said Chief Justice Taft, cannot be interpreted safely except by reference to the common law, as it was when the instrument was framed and adopted. Listen, Justice Scalia was a positive influence to have on the Supreme Court, but he didn't take this position. Justice Scalia was scholastic-minded. Justice Scalia said, you take the words of the Constitution and you parse them. Well, friends, neighbors, and kin, that's the law of the city. You parse the words of the Constitution, but if you don't pay attention to what these fellows said, the framers of our Constitution were born and brought up in the atmosphere of the common law and spoke its vocabulary. If you don't understand that vocabulary, I'm not saying he didn't in every case. What I'm saying is this, that he foisted the idea, and he loved to teach, and we are thankful for that. His conclusions were often good, and he loved to go out and travel and teach. I first saw him in law school, in a Midwest law school. I went to listen to him lecture, and he's a good teacher, and he taught a lot of good things. So when I criticize him, I'm trying to be constructive because I'm thankful for him. But he confined, he tried, and he left the idea with interpreters of the Constitution, lawyers and judges, that you go just to the Constitution and you parse the words as though it is some kind of a equation of mathematics. No, it's not. It's not mush, but it is to be dealt with, listen to me, in terms of our common law. Our Constitution of the United States is a dry and dispirited skeleton of bare bones words. A skeleton? No, it's not even that. It's a pile of bones. You say, well, I think the Constitution is boring. Now, you may not say that to other people, but you're probably saying that to yourself, and it is. If you try to read the Constitution, it's a boring document unless it is informed by our common law. It's nothing but a blown bladder. But the common law, the first principles of our common law breathed into the document, into the words, and it inflates, it stands up, and it walks. It becomes an exciting experience because the spirit, our common law, is a matter of gumption. It's a matter of spirit. Like Dean Pound, Dean of Harvard Law School, back when it was a place where you could learn about the common law, he wrote a book called Spirit of the Common Law. Our common law is the unwritten reality of the way things are around us, and we can't change them. And to learn the way things are, that cannot be changed, is to learn the law, the relationships between men and men. The Bible is a good book. It's the most significant law book we have. I believe it is errorless. I have good reason to believe that. But nonetheless, it does not speak to every contingency that may bob forth from the flux of human relationships. That's why our common law is necessary, and that is why the Bible teaches the common law is necessary. Oh, it doesn't call it common law. It has other ways of expressing it. But knowing the Bible, you'll begin to see that the laws of nature, unwritten in the nature of things, as our Declaration says, and the laws of nature's God written in our Bibles, they undergird each other. Those who demanded and those who drafted the Second Amendment revered, and I just see this word written. I imagine it's pronounced revered, but it looks like revered to me. But revered their English freedoms and knew well that the right to arms is a personal responsibility rooted deep in the common law. To know the Second Amendment in the context of our common law will correct its misrepresentation. Let me read that again. To know the Second Amendment in the context of our common law. Well, that's what the Supreme Court said. How are you going to understand the Second Amendment? It's part of the Constitution. How are you going to understand it unless our common law breathes into the words life? Well, the Bible says this. It says, by the way, this quote from the Bible that I'm going to give you is the most often cited verse by American courts of all verses in the Bible. And I've got them all listed in my Bible in a footnote. It takes about a page and a half or 2 pages in 7-point type. There's so many cases, but I tried to get them all in there, as many as I can find. And that is the words that say the letter kills, but the spirit gives life. Well, if that's true of the very words and the sentences of God himself, would not it be true also of men made in the image of God that write down words, even though their words aren't errorless? Our Constitution is not errorless. I see problems with it. But it is a good observation, an observation of the way things are and the way they ought to be and the way they've worked out. And all of it, as far as I can tell, is consonant substantively. Not all of it, especially after Amendment 12. That gets really crazy after that. But all of it appears to me to be consonant, a harmony that goes right along with the Word of God as relates to government. And the business of the Bible, by the way, is government. That is the business of the Bible, because government is God's government. It's his business. That's why he calls it his kingdom. Well, just a little bit more here. I'll quit at the top of the hour, 4 minutes. For instance, during the threat of the Spanish Armada in the year 1588, the students and members of the English Inns of Court formed themselves. English Inns of Court, those are the fellows, they didn't have law schools in England because the universities wouldn't let common lawyers in. The universities were founded by Rome. The law of the city governed there. They wouldn't let the common law be taught there, and it never was. All over Europe, including Oxford. So the common lawyers in England back in those days formed inns of court so they could educate men in the common law. They were private. This, by the way, this is where bar associations come from. We don't have ends of court here, but this is the offfalls of what happened there. If you don't like bar associations, they do bad things today. The American Bar Association has taken the wrong position. But this is the history of how it came about, because the universities would not teach the common law. England was the only place in Europe that had common law. They wouldn't let them teach it there either. So they formed their own ends of court. And when the Spanish Armada threatened England, the students at the ends of court trained themselves for the defense of their country. By the way, remember, the Spanish Armada, not about the law. The Spanish Armada was put together by the order and behest of the Pope of Rome to take the French fleet. I mean, he threatened, of course. He threatened people with hell and purgatory and all sorts of things, and kings included, like the King of France. And he said, I want you to invade England. I like what's going on over there. I'm afraid I'm going to lose it. And all that money, they owned half the land there. The Pope did. So he sent the Armada, and the common lawyers formed themselves into companies, trained themselves in swordsmanship and firearms, and having formed themselves into companies, they followed a graduate of Lincoln's Inn, that was one of the schools, there are four in England still, Oliver Cromwell, and followed him into battle against the Royalists. When Napoleon assembled flatboats to invade Britain, the barristers from the ends of court formed themselves into companies to repel the French invasion. By the way, Napoleon, there's another one. He was from a family of civilians. His father, his grandfather, they were civil law city lawyers to the hilt. Well, he understood it. He was trying to push it off on the rest of the world. He wanted to invade England. And the students at the ends of court proposed that they put on the banners they carry into battle. Now, these are lawyers saying this. Retained for the defense. Well, they did the same thing down at the Battle of New Orleans, by the way. The tradition of individual right to keep and bear arms, coupled with the personal responsibility of discipline in their use, apart from government, carried over into the United States. And when the Britain's army invaded in the year 1814, invaded, by the way, and burnt Washington, D.C., for those of you that fell asleep during history class in high school, they also invaded just below New Orleans, as you know. And the militia was formed. Every able-bodied man, including slaves, were formed into different companies. And, as you know, if you remember, Andy Jackson took command and whooped in terminal fashion the British Army, the same army, the same men that had defeated Napoleon at Waterloo just shortly before. Well, that's the militia, some of our history, and why it's important. Are you ready? Do you have a firearm? Have you gotten private training? There's plenty of places to do it these days. And I yield back and thank you very much. Gerard, you're there. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Brett.
There he is.
Appreciate that very much. Okay. So I guess we'll open up the question and answer. We've got a crew down there. It looks like Marvin is up first. So go ahead, Marvin. What's your question?
Yes, hello. This is Marvin.
Yes.
The question is concerning the constitutional challenge. I'm in the process of doing a constitutional challenge, but my question is, they haven't responded to any other paperwork. Now, was I required to, pay for a hearing, like pay those court fees into the court fees, and have a hearing?
Well,
yeah.
What we've discovered when we go into court. If you don't take the number, if you don't buy a number, they don't consider the case open. You know, actually, in cases of unalienable rights, they shouldn't be charging a fee, but they do. Right. And they won't hear the case if you don't, you know. I mean, I don't know how you put it in there.
Yeah.
But I mean, if they're not...
I did it under the old index number in which the case had been going on in the state court.
Under the old index number, and they didn't respond. So you know, I don't know, you know, how many days you gave them. You know, usually it's 30 days, but some people say that the government's allowed 60 days. So they have to respond. They really should. If you put something in under an index number or whatever, they have to tell you something. They got to tell you they're not going to respond, or that the index, that case is closed, or they can't just ignore it, and they can't throw your paper out because that's a crime.
Uh-huh.
So a lot of times if they haven't done anything and 60 days has gone by, what you do is you go out and you fill out you file the default because they've defaulted. Now, you know, I don't know if you put a wherefore clause in your paperwork, you know, what your final thing was that you were asking for. You have to make it clear. But usually if you file a default, somebody will answer at that point because they don't want you to win. They don't want to lose by default.
Where are you, New York City or Long Island or something?
Yes, I'm in Brooklyn.
Brooklyn, okay. Yeah, and what are you, in a state court?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, and who are you suing? Who's coming after you?
It's a judge. It's a constitutional challenge on a judge.
Now, how did you challenge it?
I structured your paperwork. I put a lot of my stuff, the facts in from my case, but it was primarily I use your template.
Mm-hmm.
And I served on private process server, but I didn't go in and pay an additional.
You put a notice of motion on the top, on the front page?
Yes.
And you had it served appropriately by someone else other than yourself?
Yes, I did. But I didn't pay that fee for a hearing. That's the way I'm thinking.
Well, here's what you paid for the index number, right?
Oh, yeah, that's been done some time ago,
yeah.
Right.
I never, ever, well, I did years ago, but I never do anymore if I do anything in state court. I only get the index number. I do not go for the RJI. And what happens is the lawyer on the other side, usually they get frustrated, you know, because you didn't do it, and they can't do nothing until that's filed, and so they file it for you. So that can become a problem. But now, since you're dealing with a state issue, it's not 60 days, it's 30 days. The only thing that I'm aware of that requires more than that is the federal level. So how many days has it been since you served the papers?
It's going on 60 now. It's about 45, over 45.
Oh, just as Gerard said, do an affidavit of default and bring your papers to the judge for collection, enforcement to bring down to the shop. What do you have? What kind of an enforcement are you looking for? Monetary?
Oh, yes. I mean, this is a foreclosure. I mean, he deprived me of due process. He wouldn't answer. I mean, it has been a big long fight for 10 years.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then take your affidavit of default, file it with the clerk, and then take your papers, write up an order. You know, usually lawyers will write the order up for the judge to just sign instead of the judge writing it up. If there's an objection from the other side, you know, but they're silenced. They can't say nothing because it's been 45 days, so forget about them.
Right.
But, you know, the judge may cross out a word here and put in a word there, I mean, if he feels it's necessary. But the bottom line is you have to stick to what your conclusion is. It should be defined very clearly in your wherefore clause when you filed your papers. And so you get that for collection from the judge for an order for collection. Then you bring that down to the sheriff and ask the sheriff to go get your money.
Oh, but wait a minute. Actually, it's really to stop a foreclosure and sale. That's what I really want here. You know,
well, that should be in your wherefore clause.
Okay.
Was it in your wherefore clause? Cease and desist?
Right, yeah.
Okay, well, there you go. And you bring that to the sheriff, you know, and you make sure you get that into your order for execution to be delivered to the sheriff and to make it clear in there that part of the decision was that, you know, that they're to cease and desist, and therefore there is no foreclosure anymore. They can't go forward with that. And the sheriff is put on notice. You might want to make a note to the sheriff. By the way, if they come to try to take my house right here, they defaulted. I just want to let you know that. Don't come to my house to take it because it's mine.
Okay.
You know, polite, of course, and everything. And you look like you're in good shape on this thing.
Well, I hope so. I mean,
look at from here. If they give you a problem and they try to turn it around on you and they try to say, oh, no, we'll give them more time or whatever the case may be, you object to the whole process. look, what happens here sometimes, once you get your order, your default, an affidavit of default,
yeah,
and you file it with the court, as long as it's true, and you know, you write the dates, it should be true, and,
right,
and then you bring your papers to the judge. But look, at that point, they have a problem. They can't remove that affidavit of default. And the only thing they could do is challenge it as a lie or something, but they can't do that as long as it's the truth. They're stuck between a rock and a hard place, and if that judge refuses to sign your papers, you move it to federal court for cause, denying of your right of due process.
Okay, now that's another thing. Do you start a new case?
No. You move it to federal court for cause.
Yeah.
The cause is a violation of your right of due process, execution of a judgment to begin with. The right of due process in a common law court, the judge is acting, first of all, they're under civil law anyway, and
yeah,
they're acting outside of the Constitution. So that's the only issue. And you're looking for enforcement and also an order onto the court. Really, you're looking for an order from the federal district court to that state court, you know, in the county, obey and enforce. So they do. You're looking for a writ mandamus.
Okay, I see.
Hey, John, when he moves it to the federal court, does he have to pay for an index number there?
No, it's already a case.
He's filing it on the old index number, so he should be fine, right?
Yeah, they'll give him a number in a federal court, but yeah, when you move it into federal court, you don't pay the $400. They might try to push you for a filing fee, not a filing fee, but they'll have prices for you, $35 or $85 for a motion and this and that, you know. They might have something like that, but I don't think they're going to hit you for even that in the federal court. But bear in mind, you know, you were the defendant and turned this whole thing around. You're there because they brought you in. I shouldn't have to pay a dime to begin with, is your attitude. But look, if they hit you for $45 or $55 at this point, you pay that.
Okay.
You know, the other thing is what I do is I use a different form when I go for it. I'll use the index number form, get an index number, but then I'll put on the top of it my own paper, which is a common law paper, and I'll put my own index number. I'll create one, usually using the date numbers, and whatever else you want to use. And I call the one the statutory number, and the other one a common law number. And on that, there's a form that I use. You can get it on the page where you got all that information. You can use that form, too, where you can check the box, common law, you know, court
yes,
record.
I saw that.
Well, you know, use that as a secondary. But first you go down, you already got the index number, so you put that on top of that. And I might think of a new strategy on something like that where, you know, you're correcting the paperwork or something like that. Because you were in statutory through ignorance, and the only way to get into the courts, then as you're there, you know, this is the court I'm in, and
yeah,
this is the court I require, and be ready to make a good argument in the federal district court, you know. But be careful what you say. But you want to kind of signal to them what you know a little bit.
Yeah.
Particularly, Rule 2 is null and void. Civil courts has nothing to do with the Constitution. And that you're in a common law court, and everyone here has the you know, again, you have to be careful on how you deal with the federal judge. You want to be very careful with them. But if you're signaling them, they'll get it. Then the opportunity of that judge is, well, maybe I don't want to get into a hassle here. Let me see if I can push this thing to either rule in your favor or make a phone call to make them do the right thing without even making the orders and other things, but because
right,
they don't like to see a record like this. That's the point. But you know, that's how it would go. But you're looking. I think you're in good shape.
Okay. All right. I'll let you. I'll keep you updated to let you know how it goes. I'm gonna try to do that this week.
All right.
Okay.
Okay. Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Next up is Terry from New Jersey. Go ahead, Terry.
Yeah, hi, Gerard. I was wondering, with regard to the difference between a government grand jury and a public grand jury, is there, like, for example, I had heard that if there's more than 24 people in the grand jury than it would take on the characteristics of a common law grand jury. Is there any truth to that?
I don't know that that's, you know...
25.
Yes, 25 because you have an alternate, right? There's 24 and
yeah.
an alternate, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, no. On the grand jury, there's 25 people on a grand jury. You know, as long as a minimum of, I think, 12 shows up, you know, you're good. But 25 are called, and they start off with 25. If some people are sick, they can continue without them, I guess. But they can only whittle down, I think, to 12. I think, you know, I think I heard that from... Brent, and if Brent wants to pipe in on any of this stuff, he can. But 25 is it. In the case of what we're doing, you know, we have hundreds at a time, depending on how many people, maybe 80 people, 100 people, and even more may show up for a grand jury decision. But we are dealing with something very special and unique, dealing with enemies both foreign and domestic, and we're coming in as we, the people, and taking control, and we are organic. Okay, a grand jury must be organic. If they're not organic, then they're controlled. They're tainted. They're poisoned. All federal grand juries are poisoned. All federal trial juries are poisoned. All state juries are poisoned, whether the grand or trial. And on the town level, it's just a joke to begin with, a mockery and justice. I mean, they usually, sometimes they come in with six people or something, as if that means something. But the whole thing is all a mock-up, and it's just for show, and they're going to, you know, they're going to get their conviction. Very rarely do they not. Maybe 10% can beat it by the grace of God, maybe someone in the jury realizing something and able to persuade the others or something. But they're all tainted. You go read, we did a paper on this, on a federal book, Grand Jury and Trial Jury Handbook. And by the way, it was written by... the latest was written by Clinton, and what was that? I think it was a district. I think it was a district attorney, U.S. district attorney, back way when. I don't remember. Gerard, do you remember her name? It's a female.
Not Ruth Ann. What's her name?
I can't think of her name. But anyway, those two wrote it, and what? I can't believe.
Oh, that was. Well, it was Clinton and I can't think of her name. The one that...
Well, the one on tarmac.
The one that met him on the tarmac, right?
Yeah, what's her name? I think those... Yeah, huh. Anyway, they wrote the latest...
Oh, Janet Reno.
No,
Eric
no,
says...
Was,
no,
was
it
after,
was...
It was after that. Janet Reno was a while back, but no, it's after
right.
Janet. But anyway, Lynch, that's it. Loretta Lynch.
Loretta Lynch. How could we forget?
Yeah. Lynch her up, eh?
He's horrible.
Anyway... if you go read the book, I can't believe they got away with writing this. I can't believe even these bar attorneys, that you would imagine they would be appalled with what's written in that book. But instead they see it as a strategy, a game, a leverage, and they use that information in order to get rid of jurists. And every jury is stacked, I'm telling you right now. They're getting juries trying to make sure that they get the conviction, you know. They'll ask you questions, what news station? Do you watch CNN or do you watch Fox? And that tells them a lot on how you're going to go on this thing. And, again, everything is stacked, you know.
All right, John?
Yep.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, I know you're there. I just never know if I'm going to be heard.
Oh,
I didn't mean to say it that way. I was going to make a point. No, I. Okay. About the grand jury. What do we know about the grand jury? You can go through law school, and never, ever is the grand jury mentioned. Now, the grand jury is so fundamental, so distinguishing to us, again, as a common law country. Doesn't exist anywhere in the world except in common law countries, of which there are only five major ones in the world. But yet, you go through law school and nothing's said about it. So what happens when that happens? When those that are charged with being supposed to be the preeminent keepers, protectors, and defenders of our law, namely lawyers, go to law school, we have a common law tradition, we have a grand jury. We depend upon our grand jury, have for centuries. I mean, I've read cases about the grand jury in the 14th century.
Can I have a chip?
Nobody was hung in England in the 14th century without indictment by a grand jury. England has done away now with the grand jury. I think back in 1935, if I remember my dates correctly, it was in the 1930s. We still have our grand jury. The reason we still have a grand jury is not because the legal community has defended it or preserved it. It's because way back there, somebody was foreseeing enough to say, let's just write this down in the Constitution. Let's just write it down. That way it'll be harder to get rid of. And that's what's happened. It's been harder to get rid of because it is written down. Now, that doesn't mean that it's not being misused. It is. The Hyde Commission said that with a grand jury, a United States attorney could indict a ham sandwich. That's true. What was that fellow? Oh, Giuliani. Giuliani. He was a federal prosecutor back in the days when they were going after all the mafia, the mobsters, and those lawyers that went into those cases back in the, earlier than that, even back into the 60s. They used to say all you needed in New York City, in the Southern District, I believe it's called down there, the federal district, all you needed to indict with a grand jury and to convict with a jury was a man whose last name ended in a vowel and a stool pigeon. You got him. And they were, you know, railroading these guys because they had learned how to manipulate the grand jury. And by the way, that's what's happening today in spades. The grand jury members don't understand the grand jury. How could they? The lawyers don't understand it. I didn't know anything about grand jury until my clients got called before the grand jury, and then I got called before the grand jury. Oh, then I found out. Oh, yeah. I found out what's going on with the grand jury. It's just a rubber stamp for the U.S. attorney because people don't have a clue what it is. They don't, as I was reading a while ago, they didn't live and breathe the atmosphere of the common law. They didn't. They don't. We don't today. The evil empire has done everything they can to take away from us the words, the phrases, the concepts. Listen, when the Constitution was put together and ratified, and those are the people that deserve the credit, is the ratifiers, not the upfront big names. Those fellows were echoing Washington, James Wilson, Madison. They were echoing what the people of the United States wanted. That's the way you stay in power. Is there anything wrong with that? No. But in that particular instance, folk were very Christian in those days, and the common law was important to them. It was theirs. It was their inherited tradition of religion, law, and government. And they all had differences. Every colony had a different brand of Christianity, and they were pretty vicious about defending their brand, as men are today. They didn't get along at all, is what I'm trying to say. But they had something in common. What was it, the common law? The experience of being a militiaman, the experience of serving on the jury was what tied them together more than anything else you could name, and it's still the experience that ties us together as Americans. Because we don't agree on religion. We can't be expected to. It'll never happen. We have been substantially Christian, but we don't even agree about that. And people never have, unless there's a outside force that forces us to say, oh, you all got to belong, as they did in Europe for centuries, you got to be a Romanist or you can't be a Christian. And by the way, if you don't, we'll put thumb screws under your nails and put you on the rack. Maybe we can get you to see it our way. Well, you don't want that. So what do we have then that echoes our Christian faith among all of us? Well, one of the things we have is our common law. There never has been a time, said Justice Story, that Christianity, the Bible, did not lie at the foundation of our common law. And the grand jury is a key part of that. The job of the grand jury is to say yes or no to the government. That's it. Just say yes or no. Yes, you may take this man to trial. No, you not. That's the job of the grand jury. And then the job then is to say, yes, you may take man's life, liberty, property, or a combination thereof, or no, you may not. Yes, yes, or no. But who that serves on the jury sees it in that simplicity. There's nothing more to it than that. Yes, you may. No, you may not. You have the power as a juror, grand juror, and you have the power as a petit, a trial juror. And the jury, though, one more thing, the jury, if you say, well, a common law grand jury, and I know we say that, And the reason we say that is because the way they've been doing the grand jury, it's not common law. But the truth is, not according to the procedure of the common law, the truth is, the grand jury is common law by definition, because it doesn't exist anywhere but in common law countries. If the grand jury is a common law institution, but we're being allowed to make the common law grand jury. If you have a grand jury, this is a common law jury, not a grand jury. So there's a redundancy there that we try to deal with understanding. Neither jury nor grand jury are majority-based institutions. The trial jury, how many did I convict for the trial jury at common law? 12. You got 12 jurors, they all have to agree, all 12. Now, you got a grand jury, let's say you've got 25 members in the grand jury, not all of them do, some of them do. Say you got 15 members, some of them in some states are 15 or have been. Just so it's over 12, really that's what the grand jury has always been in common law countries for centuries. It has to be 12. Why? Well, because it takes, let's say 15 members of the grand jury, how does it take to 12? Let's say you have 25 members of a grand jury, 12. Let's say you have 48 members. There are juries in England, in some of the old coal mining districts, the old mining district juries, that have up to 48 members. But my point is this, it doesn't make any difference whether you have 48, 60, or 120. You still got to have 12 to indict. Now, I'm not saying you should have 120 or 48. There should be less. But it is not a matter of the majority, because fundamentally a common law country is not a majority-based government. And our government is not majority-based. We use the majority to jumpstart things sometimes, but justice is only delivered at the individual level to the individual. In an individual instance, there is no such thing as group justice. The labor unions have promoted that idea in America for decades. It's a lie. No, justice is delivered to the man in his particular circumstances and problems. That's where justice is delivered, and it's only delivered. The final decider of right and wrong in our common law tradition is not the president, not the governor of your state, or anybody that works for those people, or the legislature, or the judge that sits on the bench. No, it's the jury. And we use them in two ways, and other ways too. Other ways too, but fundamentally, two ways. Yes or no, you may take this person to trial and try them. Yes or no, you may take this man's life, liberty, property, or combination thereof. That's it. Yes or no. Back to you, John. Thank you very much.
I'd like to add something. You know, it was my own experience that after I was convicted, I filed what they call a petition for post-conviction relief. And one of the things that I raised was the fact that I was never invited to appear before the grand jury. So the judge said, writes an opinion. He said that that's not the usual practice, that to give the alleged defendant an opportunity to appear before the grand jury. And then I had the opportunity to talk to my appellate lawyer. She says, in fact, most of the time, not only is the defendant not allowed to appear, the accuser is not allowed to appear. So, in fact, what happens is you basically have a dog and pony show by the prosecutor in which either the defendant or the alleged victim appears before the grand jury.
Well, there is no requirement that that you appear before the grand jury. The key thing is that the grand jury heard a case. And remember, the grand jury doesn't convict. They just they're supposed to be convinced that, A, some kind of a crime was committed, so that's what they have to show, and, B, that there is a target, and you were the target. And that's all they gotta show. And the grand jury, if they decide to, the problem is it's a stacked grand jury, and they are under the thumb of the prosecutor. And most did so. I mean, right there, it's just null and void. It's corrupted. So look at you were never convicted in a court of record. Ultimately, you're not going to get this justice now. But after we take back it, as long as the people step up and we take back this nation. Okay, then we'll have justice courts again, and at that point you can bring your issues back to the court, and you can make your claim at that point and make the point that, A, You know, I never was tried in a court of law. There was a stacked grand jury. It was a stacked trial jury. It was a civil court. Had nothing to do with me. And I've objected, if you've objected, all the way through. And now I want justice. I need to be repaired. You know, they have injured me. And they violated my right of due process. And for every day you went to jail, that could be quite a bit of money. So anyway, that's where your next, really, any kind of justice is going to come. That's how it's going to come. But with that, Gerard, we might want to try to move things along a little quicker. We got about 10 or 12 people in the queue. I'd like to get as many as we can. And if people want to ask more questions, they can get back in the back of the queue again. But back to you, Gerard. Gerard, are you here? You're muted.
Oh, I'm talking on mute again. You couldn't hear me? Raise my voice a little bit.
Yep. So let's try to limit the time and see if we can get through the whole list of people. And again, people can get back into the queue and maybe we'll get a second round around. We'll see how it goes. But back to you.
Okay, so we got Tamara from Arizona. Go ahead, Tamara.
Hi. We filed a writ of habeas corpus for someone. In the process of all of it, I found multiple violations of due process and deprivation of due process by keeping someone in a holding cell for 59 days without proper due process. And we did a writ, which they ignored. And then things were going on that I didn't feel were proper to make a man wait in there. And so I went and I told him, I'm paying your extortion money. And they didn't deny it or confirm it. And I got the person out of jail. I know that probably messes something up for my stand in some ways and his as well. Because I think the next thing was probably going to be what would hopefully get him out of there. I don't know.
Well, the key thing, so he hasn't gone to court yet? He's going to be going here
no.
and convicted?
No,
so
not yet.
And what's the state court?
It's a civil
county?
Court. It's a magistrate. Yeah,
so
in the county.
Yeah, but is it county, town, city, state? What is it?
In the county. It's ministerial, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's civil court. Challenge jurisdiction. Yeah. And, you know, here's the key thing, but again, you know, you need to know what you're doing. You sound like you have some basic knowledge, but you need to know what you're doing. Your first order of business is a challenge jurisdiction. The judge is going to try to take that jurisdiction. You're going to have to tell him, you need to recuse yourself, judge. B, you can't make a decision on this. Once a jurisdiction is challenged, it must be decided, which means there has to be a hearing. Certainly you can't hear it because you already believe you got jurisdiction, so you're already biased. And so let's move up, and that should move up to the state court. And the state court is still a civil court. They're going to find for them you're going to end up moving it up to the federal court for cause because they're violating your right of due process. But that is the process to go through. But you need to know the quotes on this. You know, when you make a point, you need to have a source, you know, maybe a United States Supreme Court decision, or some process of law that they have to be obedient to, showing them that Rule 2 tries to abrogate the common law, showing the Constitution that we're under law and equity, and in the cases of criminal assault upon the people, you know, you're taking criminal charges upon the people, then therefore it must be a court of law, and it must run properly. So, again, there's your argument, there's your fight, and that's how you can deal with it. Once you get to the other side of this and you win this, in your wherefore clause, when you go to the federal court, because that's where you'll probably end up being, in a wherefore clause, the only thing you issue at hand before them is not the issue of the case, but the fact that they're dealing with a violation of your unalienable rights. And that being the case, you can then put a value to that. You know, if there's three people who violated your right of due process and maybe some other right, then for each right, you can get X amount of dollars from each one of those. I would do it in silver, real money. $1,000 is sort of a key thing I work with. $1,000 face Silver, and I put a footnote in there, making that point. Morgan Silver dollars, face value $1,000, and also ceasing and desisting the case that is in motion, and so they have to cease and desist. So that's kind of what you're looking for. You got to get a good wherefore clause when you move into the federal court. You should have a good wherefore clause when you move into the state court, because who knows? You might get somebody who actually believes in justice. It's rare. I have seen it maybe a couple of times. I was impressed by one judge who really, he literally threw a bunch of papers at the other side, you know, because he saw what he was doing. He was railroading.
John, when we, I think it's best for us to go ahead and sign the joinder. When we serve those documents on them, should we do it by notary presentment?
Well, you should. You go through the. If you're going to go through a joinder, there's a process and all the notary processes, and you should send your papers out certified, and you also should probably have someone else do it, sending the papers, and we'll go through the process. Jim will work with you. You go through intake.
Yeah, it's a little different now because we had originally started with the writ of habeas and getting him out of that.
Well, if they failed there, you need to continue to pursue that.
Yeah, they did.
Because we need to go after the judge who violated his duty. Okay.
Yes.
He now has someone in jail, false imprisonment to begin with. He needs to be indicted, either correct his error or be indicted. And at this point, it is, you know, he could still have somewhat of a correction. But then once he gets the correction and you move forward, then you have to push for maybe a lawsuit. But anyway, right. We need to move on to other callers because we do have a lot of people in.
Yeah.
So. Okay. Gerard,
thank
you.
Okay. I know in New York State, if they got you in jail 45 days and they haven't indicted you, they have to let you go regardless of anything.
That's ridiculous, isn't it? Wow.
Yeah, 40. And you know what? I don't know what it is with these county jails and courts, but they do it a lot. I had a buddy that was in there.
Nobody knows the law.
Yeah, they don't even know it themselves, right? And then one day they came to his cell. They said, "Get up, get out. You got to go. Hurry up." They were like all in a hurry. And because every day they keep you in there over 45 days, they're liable for that. And they understand that. So just so you know,
right.
You know, if you put in for something, you know, because it was 50 days and like you said, they were probably ready to let him out anyway because it was over 45 days. But anyway, we're going to go ahead and move ahead. JoJo Baby, you're up. You're open. Go ahead. Are you there? JoJo Baby. Going once. You're not muted. It doesn't look like you're muted. I unmuted you. All right, I'm going to go to the next number. I don't know who that is. That's a 417 area code. Well,
yeah,
JoJo,
417 can give us their first name and their state.
Yeah, let me unmute them. Go ahead, 417, and give me your first
name. Yeah, my name's Christopher, and it's state, it's Missouri State.
Okay, Missouri. Christopher from Missouri. Go ahead, Christopher.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be speaking with both of you. I'm a new listener, relatively only. This is my third time listening to this broadcast. And I have a kind of a long-winded story for you, and I wanted to know your take on it.
Okay, well, do it as quick as you can.
I'll try.
I
appreciate it.
If it's too long, maybe we can try to get you in first in the next week. But let's try
it's,
to keep it reasonably short. Go ahead.
Sure, I'll try to condense it as much as possible. It has to do with a state and jurisdiction, so that's perfect for what you've been speaking about.
Everything is jurisdiction. Everything.
Correct.
And because you
correct.
Can beat everything with that. But go ahead.
Okay, so where does the original jurisdiction come from? Does it come from being naturalized by birth or by birth certificate?
No, jurisdiction, it starts off with God, and it starts off with the Declaration of Independence.
Correct.
And creating a nation under God, under his law, for his and to receive his blessings. which means we're going to be lawful and moral. And once we have that's where it starts. But then the authorities run down, you know, then the people have total authority over everything, and we write the Constitution.
Oh, I mean, just specifically, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I meant specifically administratively.
I
guess what I'm saying is the court system knows me under a different surname, and I've been under aphasia from a car wreck, and I have a different surname by blood quantum. I have a different father, but I received my half brother and half sister's surname at my birth, and according to maxims of contract law, there must be a competent signatory to any contract, and if the document signed at my birth was signed by my mother, who was adjudicated mentally ill and incompetent years before my birth, and I have a different blood quantum surname.
But what does that have to do with...
Then I'm not the actual person, correct?
Well, if you are the soul that they're going after, the individual, no matter what your name is, you are who you are. You're flesh and blood, an individual, a living soul.
Correct.
So the name doesn't, you're trying to play a technicality thing, and that's what they do all the time. And it's not that you don't want to get into their sandbox. There's other ways to win a case. I mean, key thing here is jurisdiction. You can, if you can get a just judge, you'll win on jurisdiction all the time because they don't have it. A just judge is one who recognizes Rule 2 is unlawful, repugnant, and is a... just totally unlawful. But if you can make that judge see that, and they realize that, and if they got a conscience, then you can get a good ruling. It happens.
That's a difficult case. I understand it takes probably years to establish
Why?
All presentments.
No, it doesn't.
You
establish jurisdiction come one hearing. Why should it take anything? Either they have it or they don't. If they can't.
Well, they did accept my acceptance of an offer previously under full immunity without recourse. And that's because the prosecutor created controversy. And then I interrupted the prosecutor, who said, "Your Honor, he said he wasn't even a U.S. citizen." And that's whenever I said, "I'm in acceptance of the offer." And so the judge...
You see, but you can get yourself in trouble with this. I understand what you're talking about.
Can I?
Huh?
I can.
Oh, yeah. I understand what you're talking about. And you're trying to use their system, their rules, and their sandbox
Correct.
To play, and they don't like you. They didn't invite you into the sandbox. Who are you?
Right.
There's a bunch of kids playing in their sandbox, and then you show up. They're going to beat you up and throw you out of their sandbox.
Right.
And all that is not real anyway. It's all fantasy. It's not real.
Does it matter whether I'm a member of the armed forces or not?
Well, that could play somewhat of a role, but I don't understand under what circumstances that might come to play. Here's the bottom line. You're in a court that doesn't have jurisdiction. They're under civil law. They have no authority.
So I should be challenging jurisdiction.
That is simple as that. And your injury is a constitutional violation.
What about Black Knight?
I don't know how that would come.
That's more difficult. Okay.
You stick very, very simple. Okay. When we do, a paper for an individual that will work, that wants some help or something, we do an amicus curiae. And our amicus curiae, which is a friend of the court, and we're coming in as the Unified United States Common Law Jury, and what do? We're challenging the jurisdiction and saying they lack due process. They're not giving due process to the individual. And that's the battle. And you can, for every constitutional issue that they have violated or unalienable right that they invited related, if they took you and put you in jail for a while, that's a violation of your freedom and liberty. Everything has a value. And everything, and those issues, each one of those could be listed as long as it's under the Constitution.
Well, what if you don't want to exist in commerce? What if you want to reverse incorporate?
Well, again, you don't exist in commerce to begin with unless you're involved in commercial activities. Are you involved in commercial activity?
I was tried in Fairgrove by under UCC, which they called the common, and I don't know
why?
If the two emerged.
Doing? What were you doing today?
I'm a caregiver for a disabled woman who has a medical cannabis card. I was pulled over for speeding, but he didn't have a readout.
They're involved in commerce, so they have no power authority over you.
Well, they ruled arbitrarily, and they didn't even allow me to get my first and last name corrected. I just said I'm commonly referred to as Christopher, but I said the last name that you're saying is not correct.
You're only agitating them. When you do those kind, when you talk to these people like that, they have no clue what you're talking about. The people at the level you're talking to, they don't know what you're talking about at all. They think you're a nut. But when you get into the courts, it's a different kind of an irritation. Who the hell does this guy think he can come and play games with the words in our law, what we do, and think he can participate? We didn't invite him into the game. I mean, it's sort of that kind of an attitude.
This is a very pertinent part of it. The prosecutor's secretary identified as clerk of the court, and only until I asked her to clarify, since there cannot be two clerks of the court, because she pointed across the row and said she's clerk too, did she divulge that she was a prosecuting attorney's secretary. Then they pulled me, the bailiff pulled me from the room without warrant and compelled me under coercion of threat to self-incriminate by prints down on a piece of paper without warrant. And
all of these battles, each one is a battle. Why even fight any of them?
Right.
Do you want to win or do you want to fight?
Well, I had a witness there with me to...
Do you want to win or do you want to fight?
I want to win.
Okay, then challenge jurisdiction, get out of there.
Okay. Because I have a warrant now for failure to appear, but I did appear.
Get your restitution, okay, through that challenge of jurisdiction for violating your rights. Okay, that's number one. Get that court to shut down by requiring writ of mandamus from the federal court for that court to cease and desist because they're not giving you due process. They need to come to the federal court and answer and prove due process in front of that judge. And if they can't do it, then that judge must rule for you. He's supposed to be there. He's going to try not to. He's going to try every way he can to maintain that status quo.
What about arbitration instead of litigation?
Well, arbitration, when you go through arbitration, it's final. But if the judicial system is running it, you know, you're probably playing a problem there, too.
If it's
a private arbitration, it depends, okay? I've been in arbitration before. I've been in arbitration under construction before engineers. And engineers understand what's going on. They understand the job site. They understand the terms because it's all construction stuff. So you can get a good arbitration. But if you get an arbitrator who doesn't understand the case that you're battling,
exactly,
you don't necessarily get justice. Now, I've been in arbitration where we chose an individual from that is an arbitrator that, you know, they offer those services and you pay for those services, but they didn't have knowledge in construction. I should have won. I kind of won the case, but I only won half of what I should have had. I should have won the whole thing. This guy was trying to be too nice and give both sides something. That's what I think. And so you don't know who you're going to get on that. But you know what? In today's environment, I take it to the people, get a jury. But again, you have to take the jury.
So should I change my status too? I mean, for nationality and treaty?
Well, again, that's all just words. I understand what you're doing because I've done the same thing. Gerard, a lot of us did this because we came in under that umbrella, and then we started to find out that most of what they're telling us, you know, all these wins and stuff that they get is BS. They're not telling the truth.
Guru.
And a lot of people that start to follow the thing, they don't have a knowledge, they don't really know how the court works, and they find themselves in trouble and in jail. They find that they're agitating the judge, you know, and everyone else in the court, and it doesn't get you anywhere. Look at just stand on justice, stand on common law, make your position, use the words of the United States Supreme Court, American jurisprudence, you can go back and look into common law. There's plenty of things, you know, we got lots of stuff, all kinds of things that you can pull out to prove your points and your words and what you're saying is and what is true and how the court should operate and go.
So if the judge moves in his private capacity anyway, is that what I do for appellate?
Well, look, if the judge, when you're going in and challenging jurisdiction, that judge has to answer. He's got to send somebody there to answer, okay? Prosecutor generally will probably try to do it and handle the whole thing. And I'll tell you what, federal judges don't like prosecutors or lawyers that are operating in the state level and walk into their courts because they don't know First of all, how the federal district courts work. Often they may break a lot of the rules. The judge gets pissed off because they should know. And I've seen that on a few occasions.
They presume and assume a lot.
That could be a little helpful. But again, if you don't make your case clear to the judge and signal to him certain things that he'll understand or she'll understand, and get them to be worried about trying to end this thing or fix this thing or finally make a rule in a way that he doesn't want to rule, you know. But that takes, you know, a mindset, really.
So whenever I challenge jurisdiction, is there any other issue I should raise?
Any violation of your right, jurisdiction, a violation.
Okay, so if it was like Title 42, 1983, or Title 18.
Well, yeah, you can use those. So you can use those issues, but I don't even bother with them. Look at you're gonna go. Well, I wouldn't say that I wouldn't bother with them because I've used them. Used U.S. 18 and 42, talking about the kidnapping and all that stuff. You can use those things as being violated. But the true violation, which is a federal thing, but the true violation ultimately really is your rights jurisdiction, the right of due process, the right of a proper jurisdiction, be heard in the court of law. Okay, that's where your damages are. I would kind of stick more towards that, and you're going to go after the judge, you're going to go after the prosecutor. What if they say
we have a limited jurisdiction, but you know it's just for superior review, but what if they present
they
that
have
argument.
Jurisdiction.
They say they have limited jurisdiction.
They have no jurisdiction.
Okay.
They could say what they want. Doesn't make it so. You know, they're not real. They're fantasy. They're fiction. They're not real.
Actors, yeah.
But unfortunately, they got the guns. They've seized control of the controls, and the people are too ignorant to know how to take it back. And we're trying to teach them, and that's why people have to learn, step up, and take back this nation, take back our courts.
I believe that.
We could not take anything back in this nation and keep it without having an honest, just court. You have to take the courts first, and a nation.
And a house divided against itself cannot stand.
Absolutely. It's got to be one nation under God. And people who choke on that, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Choke, because if you want your liberty, choke. You know, that's
okay.
What I can tell.
We're over 10 minutes now.
I appreciate you taking the time to hear me out and give me some feedback and what you think on that. I appreciate it.
All right,
okay, you're
thanks.
Welcome. Thank you, John. Ashlew from Montana, go ahead. Are you there?
Hello?
Yes.
Good evening. Yes, this is Ashlew from Missouri.
Okay.
I do have a couple questions. One is that I received a thing of censure and saying that I require to respond, but it doesn't have a name on it. It's just addressed to the address.
Yeah, they don't put names usually on the censors. I think they usually just put residents, and that's okay. And tell them how many people you have in the household. Let them make their count because that's lawful. I think they do it every 10 years by Constitution. I think it's a requirement every 10 years.
So it is lawful?
Absolutely.
Yeah, but just for how many people are in the household. They ask a lot of long forms and short forms, and you don't have to answer that other stuff.
Yeah, if they want to know how many sinks you have, how many
bathrooms, and how many people live with you, what time you get up for work, and all this other crazy stuff.
Yeah, you can put MLB, none of your business.
I would just put the number of people in the family because that's how they're structuring the.
That's what it's all about.
Right, the tax forms and stuff. That's information that they're allowed to get.
And they may be able to, you know, ask, I think, children or adults. I mean, that's probably an important information for schooling purposes. Look, at anything you feel you shouldn't want to answer, you don't answer, but bear in mind, they need to have these things because that's how, you know, things are figured out monetarily and the states and federal monies and to be distributed to the states and so on.
Okay. All right. And my second question was about the case that I joined MMA. Mm-hmm. Are we supposed to you know, to download those forms and make it out to the judge and the clerk and send it out, or
talk to Jim and he'll instruct you how to go. And we've got a whole plan. We've talked earlier. I don't know if you were here in the beginning of our program, and we spoke quite a bit about the joinders. So if you weren't here early, you go back later tonight or tomorrow and download the MP3 and listen to that, because we get into the details of the process. And it takes 4 to 5 months to go from point A to point Z. And it could take, you know, sometimes it may take a little longer only because we can't move quick enough. We have too much of a workload and we're trying to just catch up. So that happens too. That's a problem. That's why we need more help, more volunteers. So
okay.
People in prison, okay, and I got this one letter, and it's like the third or second or third letter, and another person's kind of angry because we don't respond back. I can't respond back. And, you know, I might try to pass this on to somebody, at least with this individual. But, you know, when people come in with their own plan and without a computer, you know, we're not paid here to begin with, so we don't have big staffs, we don't have enough people, and we can't accommodate things outside of a criteria that we created. But we have a process, a sort of generic process, and we only deal with things that we can run through generically. So, you know, one size fits all, or three or four or five sizes fits all. But if we have to get into arguments and debates and different things and going into a different direction, making a motion this way, and we could never do that because we don't have the staff to do that. So,
Is that something that we can help with, or do I need to take the government by consent?
Everybody can help by educating themselves to begin with, becoming a premium member of $5 or more, and taking our courses, coming to our Monday night programs, becoming committee men, registering with the militia, maybe if they're looking for a job, sign up to become an administrator in their county for the juries. And if you have time, an hour, everybody has an hour a week that they can give to somebody, volunteer to us, go to get a hold of Jan, say, hey, I can give you a couple hours, what can I do? And he'll try to stick you with a committee or with somebody else that's doing something to assist them, maybe in phone calls or something. If you have writing skills or, you know, secretarial skills, paralegal skills, we can use you for certain things. But everybody can volunteer an hour or more. If people are retired and not doing anything, they can give more time. You know,
okay.
A lot of it depends on the heart of the individual, how much they want to save this nation. You know, I go out to Patriot programs and I'm disappointed in these people. Because they seem so involved and they're so hooked into things, but none of them respond. I mean, maybe a couple of them here or there, but they don't respond to the message. You know, I'm giving them the way to take the nation back, and that's what they're there for, calling themselves patriots. I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, but then they don't respond. You know, why don't you come get educated? Why don't you come and let's take our nation back? That's what you're there for. Let's do it. But that's, you know, I don't know, people are frightened sometimes. People have good intentions and then don't fulfill the whatever it is that they pursue. And a lot of that is by design. That's our schooling, the way we're trained, because, you know, schooling really stinks, you know.
I think it's fear. So
that, too. That plays a role. Yeah. They shouldn't fear now.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody, if they pay attention, okay, you know, go out to X22. You can find that under our news program. You can find them on our right side, X22 report.
I listen to him all the time.
Yeah, today's program was really unbelievable.
Yes.
You know, the war is on. The war is on. I like the way he laid it out with the helicopters moving across the nation. You know, the war is on. The storm is here. It's happening as we speak, and it's being, you know, coveted. It appears that this is true. Okay.
Yes.
Again, the cover-up is the coronavirus that they used against us. And it was revealed today that the White Hats had the ability to get something into the system that weakened that virus. And they're thinking it's a virus that's going to kill millions and millions and millions of people. It's not going to happen. Yes, some elderly people or people with some serious medical problems may succumb to it and become their victims, but it's not going to kill the populace, and it's being used as a cover at this point. Everything's closing down, and if he closes the interstates, you know something's really going on. Because if you look at the numbers, you know, you want to talk about a real emergency, just look at the flu that's out here right now. You know, there's quite thousands and thousands of people. I don't know how high that number is, but it's far surpasses the corona thing. But
okay,
thank you.
We appreciate, you know, we really appreciate you guys. We're praying for you, and we're praying for NLA to make something happen with those, you know, what you send in. We appreciate it, and I will get in touch with Jan and see if I can help out with something.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Right, back good to night. You, Rod. I think we're spending too long. We've got a lot of people. We're not going to hit them all up there tonight, so we'll have to apologize for that. But
okay,
what we can
let
do.
Me undo. Looks like Mike.
Hi there.
Watchdog, New York, yes.
Hi, Gerard and John. Hey, John, I don't know if you're aware of this, but I have my speakerphone on, and I have my volume set really high, and it's really hard to hear you. And you're the only one that I can hardly hear. And I have to hold it right up to my ear when you talk.
Yeah,
so I don't
know.
I've
got a lot of problems with my audio. I've been doing this for over 20 years, and, you know, doing open forums live on a weekly basis and even more. And I've never had a problem like this, but I don't know. This is my third mic. I just bought this new mic. And I don't know what's wrong with it. I have a feeling Skype every time, because now they're trying to get me to renew on Skype again to, you know, to download the latest program. And I have a feeling that's what's affecting my system, but I'm going to try to fix that. I'll work on that.
Okay, good. Well, the reason I'm calling tonight is because my house is finally paid for. I paid for it in October. I bought it under a land contract. I've never filed a deed on the thing. I don't want to file a warranty deed or a deed that deals with the county or the state, because this is private property, my house is, and my land. What would you do as far as doing a legality, as far as registering it, so that I can maintain my my position as far as owner of it?
Well, I have to admit I don't have enough knowledge in that. If Brent is here and wants to respond, maybe he can give you some thoughts. But I don't have enough knowledge of that.
Do you think I should put it in a trust?
And that's what I think that's probably what Brent's going to tell you. And you don't want to file for the stupid tax stamps. That's how they get you.
Right, definitely.
Put in a trust. That is the best thing to do. You want to create a common law trust. We do have paperwork up there. You just got to read through it carefully, and you can create a common law trust. And
okay, we
Yep.
That's on the website, common law trust paperwork.
Yeah, you have to be a premium member to get to that page, but it's there. Yeah, I think it's under. Well, let's Gerard take the next questioner, and as soon as I find it, I'll announce
it. And Brent is not here anymore, so, I mean, we can ask him next week that question if you get back on.
Okay, sounds good.
Try to get back in and ask it again. Let's get, you know, Brent's idea on it.
Under education, court forms, process, and instructions, okay, that page. But access to that page is not available unless you're a premier member. And the premier member is someone giving $5 a month or more. You know, we did everything totally 100% for free until a couple of years ago.
For how much? $5 a month?
$5 a month.
Yeah, $5 a month.
Yeah. $60 a year. A cup of coffee and a roll once a month. Give it up. You know?
Yeah, I give you guys 10 every month. So
there you go.
Yeah. I think
he's doubly
that. So you have access. You'll see that page. It's under education, court forms, process, and instructions. And there's a lot of good stuff in there, some of our paperwork that we created, just a lot of great stuff, and you'll find it in there, I think. I'm pretty sure you'll find it in there. If you don't, bring it up next week, and I'll have to search it out, but I'm pretty sure it's on that page.
Okay, thank you. One more thing real quick. Are you aware in the Assembly of New York State that they passed a law that says it's an act to amend the real property actions and proceedings law in relation to the failure to raise the defense of lack of standing in a mortgage foreclosure action?
Yeah, I'd have to think about what all that even means, but no, I'm not aware of it.
Oh, my buddy's using that in his foreclosure as far as trying to stop the sale of his house, and I don't know how it's going to work out yet. So,
well, first of all, it's a direct tax, okay? And the other thing is you're in courts of civil law. That has nothing to do with you. And even the mortgage itself is not lawful anyway. They have no authority to collect. There is no true contract. I mean, there's a list of stuff. But the big one is the one that you want to really win on is the fact that they don't have authority. They don't have jurisdiction.
Right, right. Okay, that's in there. Okay, very good. I just want to make sure you're aware of it.
Okay.
And I'll get down next week, and I'll talk to Brent next week. Okay,
yeah.
Guys, thank you. Thank you very much. Have a blessed night.
Okay,
stay safe.
Yeah.
Okay, God bless. Good night.
Yeah. Hey, Terry. You there?
Oh, hi. I talked to you earlier. You referred to a book, and you also referred to a paper that you posted on the website when we were talking about the grand jury. Would you be able to recollect what those were?
A book and a paper. I don't. That was tonight?
Yeah, when we were talking about the grand jury, the number of people, and you mentioned Loretta Lynch.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
The federal grand jury rules
right.
were rewritten by her and Clinton back. When was that, John?
Oh, I don't remember what year, but you can find the paper and the books, I think, under grand jury, under the action against the judiciary. I think it's under there. I'm pretty sure we filed it under that. So on that page somewhere, I'm sure you'll find it. It'll be a memorandum, okay? So look under memorandums, and it'll be on that subject matter. Jury tampering and stacking. It's under memorandums, jury tampering and stacking. Okay, and that's where you'll find it. Now, I know we have up on our website somewhere a copy of the books. It probably have a copy and evidence on the same page, maybe further down.
This would be under memorandums?
Yeah, under memorandums. Go to grand jury, highlight grand jury, come down to action against the judiciary, click on that, scroll down the page, and you'll see memorandums, a list of memorandums. Click on the one for jury tampering and stacking. Look at anybody that's in court right now, these memorandums, you should be out here reading these memorandums and using the stuff we have and cut and paste this up. Make sure you use the footnotes and everything and build your own case with all of this information and all of these different subject matters. You know, we have the authority of the petit jury, sovereignty, statute, codes, and regulation, tax courts, USC 18. These are all different subjects that we wrote up in memorandum. U.S. Title 18 has nothing to do with we the people. And we have another memorandum, natural law versus civil rights. Natural rights versus civil rights. You know, there's a lot of good stuff on this page.
I can see that. But the one you were specifically referring to was memorandum of law.
Jury tampering and stacking.
Right.
Okay. All right, thanks.
Thank you.
Okay,
yeah,
sir. Thank you. Okay. Should we do one more? We're running 6 minutes over now.
Yeah, we can do one more maybe.
All right, so I don't know who this is. Give us your first name and your state in the 321 area code ending in 7146. Go ahead, you're unmuted. Hello?
Hello? Yes.
Yeah.
Are you?
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, my name is Demetrius. I live in Pompey, Florida.
Okay.
I was listening to you tonight, and I wanted to ask a question. What about in the case of people that have felony convictions? This was asked by somebody I know, and in the event of being a they called it a what was the term you used tonight about a person that works with you in the respect to, I'm losing my train of thought on it. What is that name you call it? A settlement, a Congress? Can you help me with this?
Counterclaim?
I'm sorry? A what?
A counterclaim are you talking about?
No, the type of person that works with you in the voting area.
You mean the Board of Elections up there?
Yes. And it was these particular functions and areas that people would like to work in. What happens if somebody has a felony conviction? They can't even do anything with that. Is that true?
Well, I think a person who has had a felony conviction that has completed anything, I think they can vote. I'm not sure on that, but I think they can. Maybe that's different in each state.
You got to go through a process when your sentence is over to be reinstated. They do go. You can go through a process, and they can reinstate that. I don't know, how good they are at that. I know a few people that have done it.
Okay. What about a person that hasn't completed they're on state probation? No.
Well, they're not gonna allow it. You know what I mean? If you got a felony conviction and you're still on probation, I don't think they're gonna give you an exoneration or a pass or whatever they call it, whatever, to wipe that out and restore your rights.
Okay.
I don't know. Probation, that's another joke, but,
Yeah.
I guess it's part of the sentence. You serve your sentence and then they give you probation. So basically, that's a plea bargain kind of, because your sentence isn't over till your probation's over, right? I mean, you have an option to take the probation or serve the time. Isn't that how it usually works? They give you the option. You either serve out the full term, and then when you get out, you have no probation. They have no ties to you. And at that point, you can apply to be restored to vote. But I don't think that they're going to let you vote and when your probation is not completed. I really don't believe that that will ever happen.
Right.
I was listening
to you tonight, mentioned something about people volunteering, and I've been on it since 9 o'clock with you listening. Is it John? John, are you the first speaker tonight?
I'm Gerard. John's the first speaker. Yeah.
Okay. You mentioned you have no really that many paralegals. I am a paralegal. I've been one for years in Florida, and quite effective in the way I do my work, and I would like to volunteer my time to help you.
Okay, well, definitely we can use you, and just get a hold of Jan. Go to our directory.
Okay.
You'll find him towards the top of the thing. You can get his phone number and email. His email is jan@nationallibertyalliance.org, or you can call him on the phone. And he'll connect you with Francine, who's our manager, and she would be handling, all of the legal stuff, and you'd be working with her and me,
Good, good. Yeah, I have quite a bit of experience in that field. Quite the reader I am. I have a big law library in my home here, so I would like to help you out.
We can really use
you
to help.
So I'm glad I stayed longer and picked you then.
we need that kind of help, so it's almost prophetic. Yeah, we have a leadership meeting every Monday, and you'll talk to Francine about that. That's before this call. There's a leadership meeting where everybody comes in and gives an account of what they're doing and make plans and so on and so forth. But definitely we could use you with on the legal side of things with us. We definitely need
as many people. Be glad to help out.
Okay, great.
Yes, sir, I will do that. I will contact Jan. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
And
you're
welcome,
your name is Demetrius, right?
Demetrius, I'm Greek.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, when we get to the other side, the deep state's gone. All these stupid felony convictions, most of them are baloney. They're going to go away anyway. They're going to go away. I can't wait till put this all to bed.
I know a lot of them. I've dealt with a lot of people. My God.
Yeah. And it's stupid.
They're awful. They're awful.
Yeah. Yep, so I'm looking forward to that all going away,
I'm looking forward to that day myself. It's coming, I know it is.
Hopefully not too long. Okay.
The storm is moving. It's over the horizon. It's here.
Well, with Jehovah's help, it'll happen. It is going to happen. Jehovah.
Amen.
Thank you.
Okay. Have a good night. I'm going to disconnect. We did. We got
Thank you. Almost everybody.
We were very close this time. But anybody we didn't get back in next week, and we'll try to get to you. Okay.
Have a good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. Godspeed.
Godspeed. Yeah.
Godspeed. Godspeed.